We're good? I'm going to call to order. Give me okay? All right. Bear with us for it. We have a technical difficulty. How's that? Oh, perfect. Hello. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Grover Beach City Council meeting on Monday, May 1st, 2017. It's good to see you all, and thank you for taking time out of your busy day to participate in your local government. So with that, I'm going to ask you all to rise and have a moment of silence with us for the brave men and women who sacrifice every day for our freedoms and liberties. Thank you. Remain standing while we do our flag salute. It's probably one of our favorite parts of the meeting where we get to invite some of our youth to come in and help us. So tonight, we are honored to have Stephanie Mora Martinez. Stephanie, I think, is joined by her mom, dad, brothers, and sisters. She is 9 years old and a fourth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. She enjoys learning and being with her friends at school. Stephanie enjoys living on the Central Coast because she gets to visit her aunts, uncles, and cousins. And she would like to pursue studying art and science when she is older. Stephanie's hobbies are drawing when she has free time and jump rope with her friends. So Stephanie, thank you for coming. Our flag's over there, so whenever you're ready. Okay.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much, and I have something for you, so why don't you come on? Come on now. I have a certificate here. Why don't you turn around and see that nice baby there? I don't know if I want to squeeze in. I know they want to shake yours.
Thank you very much.
Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Here.
And Mayor Scholes.
Here. Thank you, Donna. Let's see. We do not have any closed session announcements at this time. So we will move forward in reviewing the agenda as presented by staff to see if there's any council members who want to change the order of the agenda. Does anyone want to change the order, or are we good with the order as presented by staff?
I'm good with the order as staff, so I'll make a motion that we proceed as published.
I'll second that.
So moved. There's a motion. There's a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, so we are going to move forward with the agenda as published. I believe there are extra copies on the table in the back of the room. So let's move on. We have our ceremonial calendar. This is item number one, and this is a proclamation declaring National Travel and Tourism Week, May 7th through the 13th, 2017. And Donna, we don't have anyone here to accept this, so we'll just read this into the record. Okay. This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring National Travel and Tourism Week, May 7th through the 13th, 2017. And it says, Whereas travel has a positive effect on California nation's economic prosperity and image abroad, it also impacts business productivity and the well-being of individual travelers. And whereas travel to and within the United States provides significant economic benefits for the nation, generating more than $2.3 trillion in economic output in 2016, with $990.3 billion spent directly by travelers. And whereas travel is among the largest private sector employers in the United States, supporting 15.3 million jobs in 2016, including 8.6 million directly in the travel industry and 6.7 million in other industries. Whereas traveler spend directly generated tax revenues of $157.8 billion for federal, state, and local governments, funds used to support essential services and programs. And whereas international travel to the United States is the nation's number one services export, in 2016 travel generated $246 billion in exports, created an $87 billion trade surplus for the United States. And whereas meetings, events, and incentive travel are core business functions that help companies strengthen business performance, educate employees and customers, and reward business accomplishments, which in turn boost the U.S. economy. In 2016, domestic and international business travelers spent $307.2 billion. And whereas leisure travel, which accounts for more than three-quarters of all trips taken in the United States, spurs countless benefits to travelers' health and wellness, creativity, cultural awareness, education, happiness, productivity, and relationships. And whereas there is a pillar of economic growth creating jobs at a faster rate than other sectors, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Greenville Beach does hereby proclaim the week of May 7th through the 13th, 2017 as National Travel and Tourism Week in the City of Greenville Beach. And I think we do not have anyone accepting this. Do you, any council members have any comments on this proclamation? Okay, seeing none, we will make sure that this gets into the correct hands, City Clerk. Very good. I see a flood of blue speaker request forms coming in. Okay, very good. Okay. So we're going to move on to our public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the community to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item in the jurisdiction of this council. Please bear in mind that the council cannot take action on any item that is not on the agenda. So this is your opportunity to address us for anything that is not on the agenda tonight. I don't have any speaker request forms on public communications, but I just want to make sure that no one showed up and had not had a chance to fill out a speaker request form. Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close it and bring it back to the council. We will move into our consent agenda. This is an agenda where we take items that are typically routine. We take them as a group. And tonight we have three items on consent. The first is the Treasury report for the period of April 7th through the 21st, 2017. The second is the Treasury report for the 2016 Streets Bond account, which is the $8 million Measure K-14. This is for the period of April 7th through the 21st. And then the third is the minutes of the City Council meetings on February 6, 2017, and February 16, 2017. Do any members of the council want to pull any items on consent? Any questions on any items on consent?
No.
I have no speaker request forms for consent. So we will move forward, and if there is someone prepared to make a motion on the consent agenda.
I move that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
Very good.
I'll second.
Okay, there is a motion and there's a second. If there's no additional discussion on that motion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, we are going to move into our public hearing item, and I'm going to guess that most people who are here tonight are here for item number five.
Mayor Scholes?
Yes.
Before we do that, I need to recuse myself. My office and my home are within 500 feet of the proposed marijuana zone, so I cannot vote tonight.
Oh. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be watching.
So I'll give you some time. Okay, so this is item number five on our agenda. This is an introduction and first reading of ordinances to amend Articles 3 and 9 of the Greenville Beach Municipal Code and approve a local coastal program amendment to allow the establishment, operation, and regulation of commercial medical cannabis uses. And this is Development Application 1635. With that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Community Development Director Buckingham, or is it to the city manager?
Yeah, just very briefly.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. What's before you tonight, as you know, is the introduction and first reading of the commercial medical cannabis ordinances. This is the culmination of many months of hard work by your city council and your city staff in framing these ordinances for tonight and building on the discussions your council had in February and March. Your staff has been focused on carrying out the council's direction of allowing for commercial medical cannabis businesses in a safe and responsible way in our community. This is a key economic development priority for the city and a key aspect of our economic development major city goal. What we'll do this evening is to start out and highlight the land use ordinance that is before the council and take questions from the council on the land use ordinance. Bruce Buckingham will cover that ordinance, and then I'll briefly highlight the regulatory ordinance and some of the features in that ordinance, take further questions from the council, and then we would turn back to you for public comment and discussion and direction from that point. And lastly, let me just acknowledge our staff team who has worked tirelessly to put these ordinances together, working with the council, working with the community, working with other agencies. This has been a team effort across the board, from police to fire, city attorney, community development, and myself. We've been focused on making sure we do this in the right way for our community. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Buckingham.
Mr. Buckingham, you have the floor.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. The state passed five laws that took effect in 2016, collectively known as the Medical Cannabis Regulation and Safety Act. These laws established the regulatory and licensing structure for the cannabis industry for medical uses. The state is scheduled to begin accepting license applications in January of 2018. Currently, cities can issue local permits for commercial medical cannabis uses, and businesses will have 1 year to obtain a state license. Failure to obtain the state license would be grounds for revoking the city's permit. Passage of Proposition 64, the Adult Use Act, does allow adult use of marijuana and personal cultivation. However, it allows cities to determine if they want to allow commercial activities related to recreational marijuana. The ordinance as currently drafted does not allow recreational medical recreational marijuana uses other than the personal possession and cultivation that is preempted by Proposition 64. Some background, the city codes currently prohibit all commercial cannabis activities in the city. In July of 2016, the City Council did direct staff to prepare a draft ordinance that would allow and regulate commercial medical cannabis uses consistent with the Council's fiscal year 17 goals and work program. Subsequently, the council held meetings in August and September to provide staff direction on the framework of that ordinance. In February, the council considered adopting the land use for an overlay zone in the industrial area south of Farrell Road, but instead directed staff to increase the area to include all three of the city's industrial zones. In April, the Planning Commission reviewed the revised land use ordinance and did recommend that the council approve the land use ordinance as drafted. Regarding the permit process, there are two parts of the proposed ordinance that would allow commercial medical cannabis uses, a land use ordinance and a regulatory ordinance. The land use ordinance establishes the location that cannabis uses could occur, the types of uses that would be allowed, and development standards that are specific to commercial cannabis uses. The regulatory ordinance establishes requirements for security measures, operations, record keeping, background checks, and other regulatory requirements that City Manager Bronson will discuss further later in the presentation. So the proposed land use would allow the following commercial medical cannabis uses: cultivation and nurseries, manufacturing, testing labs, transportation and delivery, distribution and storage, as well as dispensaries. The proposed commercial cannabis uses would be allowed subject to approval of a use permit in all three of the city's industrial zones, consisting of the industrial, and coastal industrial commercial zones. Those three zones total about 86 acres. And I'm going to briefly explain the boundaries here. The Farrell Road here, This is west of Messina Court, Highland. The gray area is the industrial zone here, and this hatched area is the coastal industrial area zone that is part south of Farrell Road. The remaining coastal industrial zone is generally bounded by Rockaway to the north, South 4th Street, the railroad tracks. And finally, the coastal industrial commercial zone is north of Grand. It's bounded generally by Ramona, Front Street. It kind of bisects the block from Newport to Atlantic City, across Atlantic City, and then Front Street and the railroad tracks as well. So a portion of the proposed area is within the coastal zone, and therefore a local coastal program or LCP amendment is required. An LCP amendment requires Coastal Commission approval prior to the ordinance taking effect in the city. Based on conversations with coastal staff, it's estimated it'll take 3 months for final approval by the Coastal Commission upon adoption of the ordinance by the council. During this time, no use permit applications could be approved for any properties within the coastal industrial and coastal industrial commercial zones. Typically, the Planning Commission is the review authority for use permit applications. However, the council previously identified that the council should be the review authority for use permit applications, with the Planning Commission providing a recommendation. The draft ordinance requires the council approve a use permit that would establish the location, size, and types of uses allowed on a site. A use permit does require a public hearing, and all property owners within 300 feet would be noticed via mail. This advises surrounding property owners and allows them to access information on the proposed project and provide written and oral comments to the City Council. The Council considers the proposed use then in the context of the surrounding areas, the use permit application. In addition to that use permit application, the applicant would also require approval of a commercial cannabis permit as required by the regulatory ordinance, and hence the two permit processes within the city, then land use and regulatory, and then also the state approval as well. So there are several general development standards that apply to all cannabis uses. The ordinance requires security measures for all commercial cannabis uses. The ordinance would also require all uses have odor control devices to mitigate odors. As drafted, the ordinance requires that marijuana odors are not detectable from the property boundary, the street right-of-way, and within common areas of a multi-tenant building. The ordinance would also require all loading and unloading areas be within a secured area. And finally, all of the regulatory requirements are applicable as well to all commercial cannabis uses. So, dispensaries. The draft ordinance includes specific development standards that apply only to dispensary uses. The council identified that dispensaries shall be limited to no more than four businesses within the city as drafted. The hours of operations for dispensaries are proposed to be limited between the hours of 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Dispensaries would also be able to make deliveries during those hours of operation, again, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Based on council direction, dispensaries could not operate within 100 feet from any residential zone as measured from the residential zone boundary to the public entrance at a dispensary, except on Farrell Road, where no setback would require as previously directed by the council. So looking at a map and just identifying where we have residential zones adjacent to the three industrial zones, again, looking at the area south of Farrell, you have residential zones all along the north side of Farrell. Again, you have the Messina Court neighborhood directly to the east of the proposed area. And then you also have a 100-foot setback around the Calvin Court residential subdivision. Looking at the commercial industrial zone, along South 4th is the only interface with the residential zone. So again, the 100-foot setback would be measured there. And finally, in the coastal industrial commercial zone, the only area that is adjacent to a residential zone is along Atlantic City, and you see, again, the 100-foot setback shown there. So in addition, state law requires dispensaries be located a minimum of 600 feet from schools defined as public and private kindergarten through 12th grade. As shown here in yellow, there is one nearby private Montessori kindergarten school. This map indicates the 600-foot setback where dispensaries would be prohibited. However, staff is uncertain under state law if the Montessori kindergarten class would be defined as a private school requiring a 600-foot setback, or whether it would be defined as a program, in which case the 600-foot setback would not be applicable. So if the council wants to ensure that the 600-foot setback would apply to the Montessori school, a definition of school could be added to the ordinance, which was provided in the staff report. This map shows potential sensitive uses, which include schools, parks, and commercial daycare centers. The gray areas, again, are showing the three industrial zones. The closest public school to any of the industrial zones is approximately 1,600 feet. The closest public park is about 1,400 feet. And the closest existing daycare center is approximately 300 feet. That would be the Dandelion at Baden and 11th Street. It should also be noted that industrial zones may allow youth-oriented activities such as dance studios, of which two do currently operate on Huston Street. The council did not identify any additional minimum setbacks for any sensitive uses for dispensaries or any other commercial cannabis uses. So as drafted, there's only two setback restrictions that apply, which are both for dispensaries. The city's proposed 100-foot setback from residential zones, except on Farrell Road, and the state's minimum 600-foot setback from schools. Manufacturing, the state has classified manufacturing into two categories, level one and level two. Level one consists of manufacturing without the use of volatile compounds, which greatly reduces the risk of fire by not using or storing hazardous materials. Level two allows the use of these volatile compounds. As directed by council, the draft ordinance would allow both level one and level two manufacturing, but with level two limited to the use of ethanol only. State law regulates the storage of hazardous and storage of hazardous materials, and the regulatory ordinance will include requirements for closed loop laboratories that aid in the safety. And finally, cultivation. Cultivation and nursery uses would be allowed indoors only and prohibited outdoors and in greenhouses. The ordinance would allow mixed light buildings that have roofs that allow light into the building. The ordinance would also require all cultivation and nursery uses to prepare a water recycling management plan. That plan would require applicants to demonstrate that water is recycled to the maximum extent feasible using best management practices. And that concludes the overview of the land use ordinance. There was other material that I didn't cover in the presentation we'd be happy to address for the council, including alternatives.
Okay, so Bruce, you want to take questions from the council on the land use?
Correct.
Before we move on to the regular regulations or the regulatory ordinance?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Question for council. I live on Griffith Street. That's considered all industrial.
Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak, sir. Right now, at this point, we're going to just have...
Yep.
Sir, please. We okay. Who's got questions of staff?
Question. How are we going to determine whether or not the Montessori is a school or a program?
Staff's research looking at the California Department of Education codes has criteria for whether it is a school or a program, and that could only be really answered by the operator of the Montessori school. And my discussions with her was that it's possible that they may not qualify as a school. So again, it's an abundance of caution that council would add that definition of school. You can be more restrictive than state law, and so therefore, even if it's a program, you can require the 600-foot setback.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Mayor.
I had a question about the 600-foot setback. Is it it's dispensaries and cultivation that also has a dispensary, or is it dispensary and cultivation?
It's cultivation with a storefront, and the current interpretation of that would mean that the storefront is a dispensary.
Okay,
so cultivation with dispensary.
All right. I wasn't sure what they meant by storefront.
Actually, the storefront includes both of them under state statute. If they have storefronts, both of them would qualify for the 600-foot setback. The reason why cultivation is iffy is because most cultivators don't have a storefront. Dispensaries, okay, being retail, will. So for the most part, by definition, almost all dispensaries will, in fact, have a storefront, be subject to it. Some of the cultivators, maybe, some may not.
Okay. And as we address this issue, I'm sure there'll be further discussion on the school later on, but would we have the option of using the state definition, sticking with the state definition, but just specifically grandfathering this school?
In order to ensure that the Montessori school would be included in the 600-foot setback, it would be again the most conservative position for the council to adopt your own definition of school, which would include kindergarten programs.
Okay, but would we be allowed to do what I just asking about options, legal options?
So I think you're saying we can,
yes,
come up, we can have a definition and be more restrictive than the state.
You could. Okay. One of the options that Mr. Buckingham has given you is that you can be more restrictive, and you can create a classification of all of these institutions that have programs would be they would be subject to the 600-foot setback, all cultivators and dispensaries that had storefronts. But yes, you also could grandfather this particular school if you wanted to.
Okay. Thank you. And I just had a question about the land use ordinance and the review process. One thing I've always been concerned about through this whole process is, what if we get an overwhelming number of applications and all of the applicants are meeting the criteria in the land use ordinance, but we just decide as a city, as a council, that we want to put on the brakes on this program? Do we... legally, are we allowed to deny the land use permit for the reason of just we feel it's oversaturated at this point, or it's not a good time? Or does it have to be something that's missing in the within the ordinance?
If no cap is established, every use permit that would be reviewed by the council, three specific findings have to be made, and one of those includes the appropriateness of the intensity of the use on the site. But I'll defer to the city attorney. I mean, if there is a concern about saturation, I mean, the council always has the ability to come back and place a cap on the ordinance as well.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. And then just I think the rest of my questions are for later. Thank you.
Liquor Council, did you have anything you want to add?
Mr. Buckingham is correct. These are adjudicatory permits. Therefore, you're required to make findings to approve them and to not approve them. Intensities, to the extent that you have some substantial evidence to support the fact that there are secondary issues becoming injurious to public health and safety, due to the intensities, yes, you could deny them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Jeff?
I just had one quick question, not centered around the discussion on schools, which I'm sure we're going to have a discussion about that. But Mr. Buckingham, you had mentioned that greenhouses are prohibited. So, and maybe it was just a question for either the city manager or for someone to refresh my memory, because I thought the direction we had given was to allow greenhouses with a under a mixed use or a mixed light building to where, as long as they didn't have the light escaping from the use. So I thought we had talked about that. Did I misunderstand that, or did the consensus go in a different way than my memory remembers?
Your recollection is correct, but I think it all depends on how you define a greenhouse. Staff's understanding was the intent was you want to have a secure building, and a secure building would include some kind of stick construction that you have four solid walls and not a plexiglass or plastic panel. But the mixed light building does allow for the glass or some kind of sunlight emitting roof to the building. So staff envisions that as somewhat like the example that was in the staff report. Four solid walls for security, but then some kind of roof that would allow light.
Okay, so maybe it's a matter of perhaps we either need to settle on a definition of greenhouse. So, but that'll be a further discussion. So, but that's all I had at the moment. So, and my other items are under discussion.
Okay, very good. Bruce, maybe just one question. As I read the environmental checklist in the mitigated neg deck, it talks about a couple of things, right? It talks about water usage, and it's basically estimated at a 22,000 square foot of cultivation uses what roughly about 1.6 acre feet of water after or conservation of best practices. How does that compare to single family use?
Two single family homes roughly use 1 acre foot of water per year.
Okay. And then there was a statement in there that talks about special indoor needs and technology associated would lead most applicants to look at vacant lots. And you probably have, I know there's probably a lot of this discussion in the regulatory ordinance, but can you maybe just give me an idea of what they were referring to when they say special indoor needs and technology?
Well, John Larson from Rincon Consultants is here. I don't know if he knows the answer to that question off the top of his head.
Okay.
John?
Thank you. Your Honor, members of council, John Larson from Rincon Consultants. The short answer to your question is there's a wide variety of water conserving technologies. We tried to present a range in the document. If a cultivation operation uses soil-based growth media, they may use a bit more water than others. There are hydroponic techniques that use a different kind of growth media. We used as sort of a touchstone or a basis for comparison the Windset Farms operation in Santa Maria, which is a relatively modern, high-tech greenhouse operation. They use lots and lots of potted plants, most of which are in soil. They do have some hydroponic operations. They have a very good water recovery system where any condensation within the building is collected and channeled and recovered and reused. That's one of the ways that they reduce their water consumption. In looking at the literature that's available for the type of cultivation that we're talking about here, there are measures that are even more conservative than what is achieved at Windset Farms. So the answer is there's a very wide range and the technology is evolving.
Okay. And then just a further clarification. So the item before the council, this item is the land use ordinance, which identifies what type of activities would be allowed in the different zones and what type of permit, correct?
Yes, but technically the negative declaration covers both ordinances, the land use and the regulatory.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, so let's move on to the regulatory ordinance.
I'll pick up on that piece.
Okay.
As Mr. Buckingham mentioned, the regulatory ordinance builds on the land use ordinance. The regulatory ordinance establishes and allows the businesses to operate in the industrial areas, And the regulatory ordinance defines the operating requirements, the parameters by which these businesses will operate in order to satisfy city expectations and requirements. Both ordinances must be adopted for the city to begin accepting applications and ultimately granting permits. Our goal, from the staff perspective, in carrying out the council's direction, is to develop a suitable regulatory structure for this emerging industry within our city. Our team has worked very hard with our outside consultants, looked at other agencies to compare different ordinances from elsewhere. We shared this information with the council initially in February and March, some early drafts, and then we've taken your direction from the March 6th council meeting and incorporated that into the revised ordinance that you see before you this evening. So just to briefly summarize some of the key provisions in the regulatory ordinance, as Mr. Buckingham mentioned, all businesses must require both the city permits, both the use permit and the commercial cannabis permit, along with the state license. They have up to 1 year to receive the state license once the state begins issuing such licenses. The commercial cannabis permit would be issued by the council if the timing was such that it would be approved at the same time the council was approving the use permit. Those two could be brought together simultaneously. If the use permit was approved first and the cannabis permit was coming second, then your direction at the last meeting was to grant the city manager the ability to approve that permit with an appeal process to the city council. The ordinance does also include an annual renewal process for the permits as spelled out. Our interest with the renewal process would be to make that process very efficient, but still give us the ability to conduct that process every year consistent with what is coming from the state level. The ordinance requires security systems and measures in order to make sure that all the businesses are taking care of the required public health and safety factors that we all want to achieve. At the council's direction from the last meeting, employee background checks would be conducted by the city for all employees, for managers, for owners of these businesses. We are currently working with the state on the live scan process as we speak to get this process off the ground, and our interest would be to move this forward just as quickly as we could within our local control. As the ordinance states, there is no alcohol consumption on site with these businesses if the use of cannabis products would be allowed if medically necessary. State law does have that language in place that if you allow consumption of cannabis products, you cannot allow for consumption of alcohol on site. The city attorney can elaborate further on that particular point. The city would retain the right for inspection, for fees, for audit rights to be able to make sure that the auditing process, the financial records were operating as they should. We would be able to go on and do periodic inspections, much like we do with other businesses across the city, to make sure that our codes were being met with compliance like other businesses. The permits would be issued for the property, for the particular location, and would not be transferable without city manager approval. For this particular point, this would still remain with the business at that location, but if they change ownership, for example, then there is a provision that would allow for that transfer. You still have to go through all the operating requirements as stated within the ordinance. As Mr. Buckingham mentioned, level one and level two, ethanol-only manufacturing is authorized under the regulatory ordinance and further described. One component to mention is that the ordinance refers to guidelines that would be developed by the Five Cities Fire Authority that go into greater detail about the requirements in manufacturing. Our interest is to have those guidelines be updated more frequently as needed and not have to go back and update the ordinance every single time we change one of those guidelines. That way we can keep this flexible and keep it up to date. Minors would not be allowed on the premises, so nobody under the age of 21. No cannabis products would be visible from the public right-of-way. All businesses shall have a point-of-sale tracking system so that the sales records and activities could be well-maintained, and there would be an odor control plan required as part of the provisions to make sure that was being kept after. And then just to step back a little bit on the broader environmental review, the NEG DEC, as we just touched on, the NEG DEC did indicate that there were that there are no significant environmental impacts as a conclusion from the study. The neg deck could be adopted as a result of the work that was done. We actually did the original neg deck back earlier this year and then updated it given the expanded geography for the two other industrial areas. As you alluded to earlier, the primary issue touched on was involving water supply, and we did believe that given our water supply currently, the potential cultivation area, and the stringent requirement for water recycling plans, that we do have adequate water supply to maintain the ordinance going forward. And then lastly, fiscal impact. As the council is aware, Measure L16, approved by voters last fall, did identify a revenue impact of $1 to $2 million annually over time as the businesses got up and running and we have had a track record underway. That's still our estimate going forward. The actual revenue is dependent upon the number of businesses that are established, what types are established, their annual revenue amounts, how many cultivation businesses are up and running. So there are a number of variables that will impact this revenue over time. For next fiscal year 17-18 starting in July, we do have a fairly conservative estimate of $150,000 in revenue generated next fiscal year, assuming that it will take much of probably the first half of the fiscal year to grant the permits, to get the licenses established, to grant the building permits for the businesses to start operating by early 2018. We intentionally kept this revenue estimate fairly limited so that we could baseline that into our budget process. If we had more revenues coming in, that would be a great thing for all of us, but we wanted to keep this first year fairly tight and then see what happened and update our revenue projections for future years as a result. And lastly, we will be assessing a regulatory fee that offsets the direct costs of regulating the cannabis businesses. These are direct costs of regulation, not the potential cost of future impacts, but really the cost of regulating the industry and carrying out the ordinance. So these are costs that will include costs for background checks, for the code compliance work that we'll do, costs for the permitting operation. We are looking at some part-time staffing resources within community development and our police department, along with operational costs and consulting assistance to help carry out this program in a cost-effective, reasonable way. Our initial estimate right now is that we're looking at about $175,000 in overall cost for this regulatory program. We'll be coming back to you with more information on May 15th that spells out the cost in greater details and provides a suggested fee structure that would be associated with this regulatory program. But again, our interest is to make this an effective, efficient, and reasonable regulatory approach to help carry out these regulations most effectively for us. So again, May 15th is when we'll have more information on the regulatory approach for you. And then with that, I believe we are done with the regulatory ordinance and be happy to take your questions on this ordinance or any other questions on both ordinances.
Thank you, City Manager. Jeff, you have any questions?
Actually, just had one question before, and then again, my other information will be under discussion items, but actually goes back to probably the land use and the regulatory ordinance. Bruce, you had mentioned that we would need to go to the Coastal Commission in order to get compliance with our LCP. So did I read it correctly that taking a positive action this evening would give you authorization to submit that now? So we would be almost halfway through the potential three-month period if and when these ordinances took effect?
My understanding is we wouldn't be able to submit that until adoption of the ordinance. So after the May 15th meeting, we would then submit the application to the Coastal Commission.
Okay, so I did interpret that incorrectly then. Okay, great. Thanks.
Miriam?
I know we're considering in this portion allowing level two manufacturing in a limited basis, and from what I understand that will be addressed more thoroughly in another permit that will go to the fire chief and down that road. But I'm just wondering if in this regulatory ordinance we should define level two manufacturing, just because we kind of are going with our own limited version of it. I don't know if that's...
I mean, as drafted right now, the only volatile compound you could use for level two is ethanol.
Right.
What the Five Cities Fire Department will draft and bring back for the council to adopt by resolution on May 15th will be, I'll say, all of the more detailed requirements of the manufacturing process. They would only be able to use ethanol, but then there would be additional requirements for, again, the manufacturing process, how much material, and so forth.
Right. Because the state, and this might be more for the city attorney, because the state definition of level two includes all volatile compounds, but our Grover Beach reading of level two is only going to permit ethanol, I think, at 55%. So is that something that should be laid out in the regulatory ordinance? Does it need to be?
I think in 4,240 it does. Basically, the last sentence says, Type 7 state licenses level 2 manufacturing shall be limited to using only ethanol as an allowed volatile substance solvent. So functionally, we have limited it to it. We can be more definitive if you want to limit it to a specific percentage of in that context, as you articulated. But as of right now, only one volatile substance allowed, that's ethanol in the ordinance.
I just didn't know if it also needed to be in the definition section or if that covered it.
I think that covers it.
Okay. All right. And if when these regulatory permits are assessed, one thing that I would want to know about, that I would want to ask about is if someone's moving into a new building and a business owner is displaced, how long was that business owner given to move? What were the terms? Was that person given assistance? Is this the time when those type of questions would be asked, or would that be more under the land use permit? I want that to be part of it. So is that I want to know that story. So is that something I should want to be included in this regulatory portion or somewhere else?
I'm going to defer to the city attorney.
City attorney.
I'm not exactly sure what you're looking for, in the sense that there are no relocation obligations on the part of the city to the extent that there are businesses displaced. It's not similar to the redevelopment agency and relocation funding and things like that. Agencies were required to comply with previously under state statute. It's really a market-driven private issue between if a business comes in and buys a piece of property and so doing, someone is, you know, loses that particular facility as an ability to operate. It's really a private matter between those two entities. Now, if the council wants to give direction, and I'm not quite sure what that would be, as to whether you want to accumulate information related to that, we could look into doing that. But I think we need a little bit more direction from you as to what you want to see.
Okay. I'll bring it up during discussion then. And
okay. As of right now, there's nothing in the ordinance that would impose upon the city any obligation for relocation expenses, or in terms of gathering any information whatsoever about relocation of current businesses that may be displaced because of this particular program.
Okay, thank you.
Barbara?
Nothing at this time.
Okay. I'll save my questions for later. I just think there's some clarifications that we need to make, because I think one of the things I do want to make sure everyone understands is the land use portion is adding a line item in the use table that would allow commercial cannabis activities, but it's not prohibiting other uses from being in that zone. And when we get to talking about this, people kind of believe we're turning this entire zone is the only thing that can be there are commercial cannabis activities. So I want to make sure that there's a clarification on that. So staff, you can, when the time's appropriate, we can talk about that. Let me open this up. I know there's a lot of folks here who would like to address this This item before the council, I do have several speaker request forms. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give everyone 3 minutes. I'm going to call the first speaker, and then I'm going to call the second speaker. And if the second speaker could start making their way up to the podium, we can get through this in an efficient and respectful manner. And I just want to make sure that everyone has an opportunity to give their input to the council. So let me start with Marie Roth, followed by Allie Cooper.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I wanted to hear everybody else's comments first, so I'll try not to get mine in so hurriedly.
Did you slip in first?
I guess. Thank you, Corey. Okay. greetings, and thank you. You guys are doing an amazing job. I'm quite familiar with how arduous this task is, so thank you, staff, for your diligence. just wanted to say, so I'm Marie Roth with the San Luis Obispo County Cannabis Business Association, also known as SLO CCBA, and we are busy cultivating relationships, ideas, and solutions, most recently at the American Cancer Society's Relay for Life in Paso Robles. Rumor has it that American Cancer Society is considering cannabis in its research, and of course we want the cannabis industry to be involved in that to lend their expertise that only they possess. Representing the SLO Cannabis Business Association has been exciting at the events that we have participated in, the Templeton Chamber of Commerce Business Expo and the Earth Day event last weekend, and then we'll also be at the next relay in Atascadero May 20th. And what I'm getting at is the public is quite grateful for this discussion and being able to, you know, in a more relaxed environment, be able to ask the questions that they might be embarrassed or intimidated to. We absolutely enjoy hearing their stories. We love clarifying regulation and ordinances, keeping people apprised of what's going on here. And we absolutely enjoy cultivating those relationships. Regarding the ordinance or the regulation that you have proposed today, it's amazing to see how far you've come. One of just the questions that I was curious about is the distance between dispensaries, and if that would really be necessary. You know, I know there's the question of saturation, but when it comes to tasting rooms for wineries, there isn't usually a problem with them being close together. And not only that, but at this point, it doesn't seem to be that there would be on-site consumption at these dispensaries. So maybe considering, not making that particular thing an issue. And then also just wanted to let you guys know that recently, if you haven't found this out already, the California of Food and Ag last Friday released their draft regulations for California Medical Cannabis Cultivation Program. That's 58 pages long. In addition to that, also released was the California Department of Public Health proposed cannabis manufacturing regulations, and that's 98 pages long. And if that's not enough, we have the Bureau of Medical Cannabis Regulation released proposed regulations for medicinal cannabis. And that's another 57 pages. And then once our head is completely spinning, we also have the governor's proposed trailer bill, blending adult use and medicinal together, among other things. So we still have a lot of work to do. You guys keep it up, and we'll look forward to the next time that I get to address you. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thank you. Allie Cooper, followed by Craig Smith.
Your Honor, distinguished council members, first and foremost, as a parent with two young children, I have to commend you and thank you for your thoughtful leadership in moving forward and considering an ordinance that would bring order, if you will, to what has been an illicit and illegal market across California. The ordinance that is currently being considered achieves, in my view, three key objectives. First, it strengthens local government's oversight and regulation in medical cannabis, which in our view, in my view rather, protects patients in this space and allows for access to safe medicine. Secondly, the ordinance protects local community from the undesirable and real consequences of an illegal and illicit cannabis market. As you have learned today, and many of us here have learned, that the ordinance, in fact, requires from very stringent background checks. These background checks are super vital to ensure that as the city moves forward, we are, in fact, weeding out bad actors and bad agents and exposing who those folks are. Thirdly, it ensures that Grover Beach is a first mover to capitalize on the tax revenues that will come in. Those tax revenues are key. Those tax revenues may be reinvested back in our neighborhood parks, may be reinvested back in infrastructure, youth services, road repairs. These are key pieces that tax revenue would and could be invested. The ordinance is in alignment, as you heard with the previous witness, the ordinance is in alignment with state regulations. By and large, I've studied the state regulations or the draft regulations that were released on Friday, and I've studied this both ordinances here, and they are consistent, by and large, with the state ordinance. And as such, moving forward really does afford Grover Beach the opportunity to capitalize on what will be a $10 billion industry in the state. And in closing, I just had a comment here, particularly the prohibition with regard to the prohibitions on outdoor cultivation and greenhouse cultivations. What I will say at this date, at this stage, it looks like the language may be inconsistent with state mandates to achieve 50% of power from renewable sources. So in some ways, banning or prohibiting greenhouses or greenhouse-like structures or light deprivation systems makes it increasingly difficult to achieve those reductions in carbon footprint. So with that in mind, I would like to, again, commend you for your leadership and ask that you vote to move forward with this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Craig Smith, followed by Lynette Navarro.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, Craig Smith, a proud resident of the city of Grover Beach. I think it can go quite honestly said that by adopting this ordinance, the city of Grover Beach can hopefully and finally parallel the revenue received by some of our adjacent jurisdictions and take these fees and apply them in all the places you people have supported that the residents all believe in, the continuation of repair of our streets, continuation of the upgrade of Grand Avenue, money for our parks. You know, we have great potential here, and I think it goes quite easily said that by passing this ordinance with the anticipated fees will be a huge, huge asset to the city, and a lot of us are very favorable for that reason. Secondly, I'd just like to take my hat off to staff. This has been a daunting task. We had an opportunity to review some of the previous and prior ordinance drafts from other jurisdictions and shared that with staff, and it was very well written. I think the majority of everything that is needed to be inclusive for this to go forward has been had. Sure, there's going to be details, and I think a lot of that can be worked out. A lot of the developers are looking forward to getting into making that application and dealing with it in the manner in which would meet your expectation. So in closing, I just hope that we can adopt this resolution, that we can adopt the NAICS DEC and approve the proposed local coastal program amendment. Other than that, thanks again for all your hard work, and again, thanks to staff. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Lynette Navarro, and I believe Lynette's going to be followed by David Saparzde. Almost. Help me out with that, Dave, when you come up.
Hi, good evening. I'm Lynette with Custom Canvas Company, and we've been in Grover Beach on Griffin Street in the industrial area for 23 years. I spoke 2 months ago, and I didn't feel very well that night, and my father was very ill, so please don't look at the tapes. He's since passed away. He had cancer, and so I'm not here to judge the product at all, obviously. But I am here to judge the placement on the industrial area off of Farrell, because it is not an area of blight in the 23 years that I've been there. In fact, Many of my neighbors, I'm still the young kid on the block. I've sponsored many teams in the area along with my neighbors there, and I share your concern with what's going to happen to them. A lot of the neighbors since I've been there who said they would never sell have started to say, well, if they offer me $1 million, and many of them have been offered $1 million, some of the spaces have now are in escrow. I've heard numbers of 25 people who now are leaving. My friend took her car in to get serviced, and his friend sold, and they're moving to Hawaii. So we're changing, and these people coming in aren't from here. So are the people who are going to work in these dispensaries, are you going to have an ordinance that says those people are from our area that are going to work in the dispensaries, or are we hiring people from outside of the area? Because I also live here. I live in Grover Beach for all of these years as well. So my children went here. The neighbors went here. I've bought all the bad paper that I don't, the magazines I don't read. You know, so please think of all of these things. Mr. Scholes, when you first started running for city council, you came to my home and said all the wonderful things you wanted to do to help the Grand Avenue and build those businesses and get people to move in. And my thing I said to you was, well, I work in the industrial area for many years now, and I don't ever hear any good things about the industrial area and all the things that we do. And so, you know, I'd like a little bit of props for what we do, because the economy was bad at that time, but we were still all working hard. And I've never heard anything about us being there. And there's no blight there, but you're kicking us all out. So, again, I voted for those streets to be repaired, and, you know, I'm here, but I don't really feel the love. So I keep feeling like Grover Beach puts all of our eggs in one basket. I've heard all 20 years about the conference center. I've heard all 20 years about the broadband. I put the awning in the company for the first company for the broadband right before they went in bankruptcy. I've recovered the awning for the new broadband, but I'm still here. So think of these things, because I don't think you are. Those properties are not worth $1 million, but I think that we are. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Navarro. David, followed by Constance McLaughlin.
I'm David Saparzada with Paramount Investment Group. I've been a real estate developer for the last 15 years. The last 2 years, we've been focused on the MMJ business. And what we've seen to attest to the last testimony is what we've done in our projects is hire all locally. So that's the first and foremost. That's extremely important for us. So we hire local architects, engineers, construction companies. And in turn, that obviously we're going to be creating tax revenues for the city to help with the roads and help with some of the issues that are here. And I believe it really helps. Another thing we do is we focus on renewable energy on all of our projects. That's what we're planning on in our Grover Beach project as well. Water recycling, renewable energy, solar panels, that's the way to go. You got to keep it green. We've reviewed the ordinance. It aligns with the state. We believe it aligns with the state perfectly. I think you guys have done a fantastic job. It's very impressive of how you've done it. We've seen other ordinances as well. We think it's extremely well written, and we ask you to adopt it and move forward. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. So Constance, followed by Terry. And Terry, you're gonna have to take pronounce. Make a lot of thank you, Terry.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address you. You've made amazing progress since this has all begun, and hats off to staff for all the hard work. I wanted to just bring to mention your proposed restriction on the strength of alcohol used in the extraction of medical cannabis. Basically, I would urge you to kind of broaden your purview of this herbal medicine making. It is a tradition in the simplest form, that alcohol be used to extract cannabis. It's the most basic and age-old approach outside of maybe using vinegar or water. And a more efficient approach to extraction is a higher proof or a higher percentage alcohol. And it does a cleaner job producing a higher quality product. I know that we use an organic cane alcohol that's like 190 proof. And in its simplest form, you know, there's no sparking, no heat that's used. You know, I was really tempted to bring a mason jar with alcohol and herbal components just to kind of drive the point home that it's you know, not mechanized necessarily. It's very straightforward. I would urge you to kind of broaden your view of that. Thanks.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Michalacha, correct?
Michalacha.
Michalacha, followed by Wendy Cronin.
My concern is I live at 1087 Griffin, and there's shops across from me. They've already kicked the people out of the businesses to start their cannabis business there. Well, they're less than 100 feet from me. I don't even know how they could even do this. And so that's one of my concerns. I don't even know how they could operate a cannabis business there. And not all of us got this notice either that are on Griffin or Calvin. In fact, I surprised one of my neighbors with the first time around, and I gave him the notice, and he's like, I never got this. My neighbors down the street said we never got it. So that is also a concern with me, that we're not all notified on this, and we need to be. And most of the people on Griffin, that's the residential area there, don't want this in those businesses there. We don't want the traffic or any of this. So that's a concern with me, but if you offer me $1 million for my house, I'll just shut up and leave right now. But that, and there was something else on my mind too, but that's my main concern right there, is we don't want the traffic. We don't want the smell or the businesses doing this there. And I don't think they're going to be able to, because they're less than 300 feet, you know, even went to the back of the businesses. So I don't know. What's the code on that? For it's got to be 100 feet or 300 feet away from the residence?
Yeah, so we're going to have that discussion. The final decision has been made, but so why don't you, any other questions that you would want us to address?
That's my main one.
Okay.
Is that, and I feel that would lower our property values too if we had it right there.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
Thank you for coming and participating.
Okay. And if I see $1 million, I won't be back.
Wendy Cronin.
Good evening, city council members, and good evening, city managers and city staff. I wanted to thank you for the wonderful opportunity to allow us to have this business structure in the city of Grover Beach. As a cannabis business owner of a delivery service, I hire local people. I have cultivations with local growers. I have a variety of different type of people who work for me now and plan on bringing them into the dispensary business. So all of the people I would hire would be local. And all the people that we would have working in the dispensary would be local. We also would like to thank you for your broad thought and your ability to bring this into San Luis Obispo County. Speaking as a nurse, I have administered this to many patients, cancer patients, autoimmune patients, people with different types of injuries. This is a wonderful plan, and I am proud to bring it into the city. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not have any other speaker request forms. Is there anyone in the audience who wanted to speak but had not filled out a form? Go on once. Please fill out a blue speaker request form so I can call you up, okay? Yeah. Cynthia Gonzalez.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, City Management. Cynthia Gonzalez with Elite Care Enterprise, also here from Grover Beach, resident of Grover Beach. This was an arduous task. It's been 16 months, I think, since we started this dance, and I know I've said the same thing over and over, but it really is an exceptional stand that this community is taking to move forward with this very, very, very important decision. Right before coming out tonight, I had a call from a prospective patient who brought about this most obscure case of cancer that we hadn't seen before. There's 200 rare patients who are experiencing this type of cancer, and it's just fast and invasive and growing, and it's just amazing because she came to us because we had just taken care of a family member of hers 6 months ago and had the same condition, but we were part of the process with aligning ourselves with Western medicine and actually curing this cancer. So it is a real medicine. It does have an important place. This ordinance has taken a lot of undertaking from staff members who have stepped aside from their other positions and fulfilled this obligation, as well as doing a great job with their current positions. So we certainly do applaud our fire chiefs, our police department here, and of course all the well-worn staff and all of you that have so graciously allowed us to be able to bring this to light. So I'm here today just to thank you again, and as a member of the community, we can certainly see that there is a need for improvements in areas, and I'm assured the fact that this money is going to be not only serving the patients who are in need, but more importantly, the constituencies of the community here who will also see the wealth of this effort that is brought on by so many people who are doing it for all the right reasons. I mean, we laugh about the money. Yes, is there money to be made? Of course there is. There's a business structure that we cannot deny. But the most important thing is it's a win-win-win for everyone. And again, I just want to applaud everyone and for taking on this effort and for all the energy that's gone into it. And we thank you. And we just appreciate that we've had a chance to speak on your behalf and on behalf of our patients. Thank you.
Thank you. Rodney Cornells, followed by Ann Abala-Suria.
Hello, my name is Rodney Grunelsch. I'm the president of California Fine Wire down on 4th Street. We are a company that actually sells around the world. We do sell to military, and we sell to federal government contractors that sell to military. It is a banned substance to the actual government. I'm not personally saying do not put dispensaries in. I'm not saying that this is the wrong thing to do. I realize you guys need money. I realize you guys have to have a thriving community, to have thriving tax revenues, to have beautification that happens with the community. My concern is, as a large business owner, how are you guys going to audit the process enough to know that there's no cash business? I had an opportunity to speak to, at the last meeting I came to, I spoke with a dispensary person that actually has a dispensary that talked at the last meeting. It's an all-cash business. They basically said it. It's all cash. It's in a safe. It's 24-hour security. I'm concerned about, you know, that if you have this large sum of money sitting around and someone wants it, what's going to be the security concerns they have that? Besides the large sum of money, how are you guys going to know how much money's in this safe so you can collect your taxes? My concerns are, as a legitimate business owner myself, and being in this, I want you guys to tell me in some way that this is going to be audited and regulated, and you're going to get your money, and all of us in the community will share from those tax benefits, and at least use those tax benefits to help the people that are the not the medical side, but the other side. Sorry. But the people that have the dispensaries that are recreational users that might have an addiction problem, but are you going to help with this tax money for that, or is it just purely going to go against your roads and parks and beautifications? I'm just a concerned citizen, and I realize that there's nothing I can do about the ordinance that you are moving into our area. We have a different zone. You're now adding this into that zoning. I'm just saying don't do it, but I realize as a community you want to generate revenue. So that's all.
Thank you for those comments. Okay. Ann?
Good evening, council members. I have just one question. As the definition, I'm the owner of the Montessori school. You probably know that by now. And one question came up earlier this evening as to uncertainty in relation to the definition of our Montessori school. So I would like you to give me a request for a specific document, if that's possible, to settle that question. Or a request for me to settle that question for you. Either way, I'd be happy to comply. So okay. That's the only question I have, actually.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay. So I have no more speaker request forms. I'm going to close this. Okay.
Well, I'm Debbie Peterson, and I did want to speak Mr. Mayor, as a private citizen.
If I might, Mr. City Attorney, realizing that Ms. Peterson is here to speak as a public citizen, but she's recused herself from her council responsibilities because of an item, is this an appropriate public comment?
As a member of the public, to the extent she's representing herself as a member of the public, she can speak to the issue.
Okay, great. Just thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. Love that First Amendment. Thank you for asking, Jeff.
Just making sure. Yep. So,
Ms. Peterson?
So speaking as a private citizen, I wanted to echo what Ms. Navarro said, and I think that the council does have a responsibility, and this is my view as a private citizen, that you do have a responsibility in bringing in a whole new industry to remember the million-dollar-plus industry that's been here and that supported our community for all of these years. And I think that from my point of view in our community, I want to see healthy families. I want to see healthy businesses. I want to see a healthy environment. And this applies to our small cannabis businesses as well as our small local businesses that have created the head of household jobs and paid the taxes and made that the thriving industrial area, albeit almost invisible, but the thriving industrial area that we've had. And so as a private citizen, I would like to ask you to carefully consider what we need to do as a city in order to make sure that we still have a thriving business community, not one that is just one-sided, but one that embraces our whole community. And just to leave you with the thought that we do not enable health by disabling other businesses. And also to ask that the council seriously consider the issue of electricity. From my understanding, the cannabis grow businesses in the United States are using now, the indoor grows are using 1% of all the electricity used in the United States. And so I believe that it's really critical that we look very carefully at everything that we can do to conserve electricity as much as possible so that it is available so that we have healthy businesses. Thank you.
Ms. Peterson, can you also fill out a blue?
I will do that, yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close this to the public. And I do want to remind everyone that tonight what is before us is a first reading of two ordinances. There's also a resolution that would give staff some initial direction regarding Coastal Commission. Depending on the decision made by this council tonight, depending on the level of amendments to either of those ordinances, let's say if they were minor, there would be a second reading of that ordinance that would come back in 2 weeks, and you would be given an opportunity then to comment as well. So I just want to make sure everybody understands the process that we are going through. That sets the stage. And let's say we move even further and our ordinances are adopted and they go into effect. That means anyone that is looking to apply for a land use ordinance, because there are no uses that are contemplated as being allowed by right, they would have to go through a use permit process, and that would require further environmental review and an application of the standards and specifications. So I want to make sure that that we're clear in what our process looks like and we can further clarify more. So with that, we've come back to the council. Mr. Grinnell, asked the question regarding how are we going to audit the process, because he is correct that this is a cash business, and what are some of the protections. And I know that staff, and we've talked about this and have contemplated this, so Chief Peters, would you?
Yes. As part of the regulatory program that the department will be participating in, we're going to work closely with our consultants to learn the process. There will be seed-to-sale tracking and point-of-sale tracking businesses, and then that'll allow our assigned detective, who is going to be the regulatory officer for the business program, to help do some reviews and audits. And depending on the necessity of the audits, they could be done quarterly, they could be done yearly, could be done semi-annually, depending on what is necessary. As we're learning through this process in the beginning, we're going to take what's best practices from our consultants and what they advise us.
Okay. Did you have anything you want to add to that?
I would just add that we are in discussions with our local bank, the one that we deposit with, regarding the transfer of funds into our accounts. Obviously, once we receive the funds, we view those as tax revenues, similar to other type of revenues that the city receives. And we want to make sure that we coordinate with our bank regarding deposits for other businesses as well. So we are in discussions overall. This is an area where there is not clarity from the federal level to the extent that we would like to see from a banking standpoint. And so we are working diligently to make sure that this is a well-regulated, well-audited business, and that we have a good sense of the business activity and the tax revenue that is generated for the city.
Okay, very good. Ms. Roth, I believe, had brought up the question of distance between dispensaries. We know that in staff report you said the council would be considering a maximum of four. So has that issue been brought up with staff before?
As drafted, the ordinance has no minimum distances between dispensaries. I believe that was an alternative that is something that the council could consider, but it is not part of the draft ordinance.
Okay. And then I think Mr. Cooper had brought up a question regarding renewables and some state requirements and state laws. I don't know if that had been something that staff was aware of, or how we might address that.
This staff person isn't aware of that. This was regarding energy efficiency. Mm.
Yes.
And the current regulatory ordinance indicates that a detailed description of energy and water usage plan enumerating best practices and leading industry practices and efficient utilization of both resources. So we would look to this and, again, look to best practices. And certainly if there are state guidelines or regulations implemented, we'll be following those as well.
Okay. And then I tagged on it with Ms. Peterson and brought up the issue of electricity. I would suspect that any use would have to contact our local service provider. Have you had any conversations on that item, that issue?
Staff is not directly. Again, we would be implementing best practices and most efficient lighting systems. So I think that's primarily the focus here is for cultivation. So we're certainly going to be looking for applicants to provide the least energy consumption as possible.
Okay. And Ms. Navarra, Lynette Navarra, I know she spoke, and I think you and I are basically neighbors, and we live in the same neighborhood. So we certainly do want to recognize the businesses that are down there, and I think in our goals, the council's goals, we talked about looking at ways to retain businesses. So I do want to acknowledge that. I do want to acknowledge the folks who are down there and those the sensitive nature of that. Staff, I know we no longer have redevelopment, and is there some legal things that the council could do? For example, I know that there was a petition, some folks had brought in some items that had talked about. Let me just give you an example of one of them, which I thought makes a lot of sense. It says grandfather in the approvals and permits granted to existing businesses so they can take them with them to another business in Grover Beach without having to go through a lengthy approval process again. Is there anything that would prohibit the council from being able to establish certain standards and things of that nature?
Unless the city attorney opined otherwise, I believe that staff could certainly explore such opportunities to streamline future permits and make sure that the regulatory process for future business locations was as straightforward as possible. You are correct that we don't have the redevelopment agency that had more tools in the toolbox for dealing with business retention and business issues in general, but to the extent that we could, we would certainly do what we could carry out at the council's direction in trying to find a way to help businesses where we can. I'll leave it to the city attorney to add more definition of what we could or couldn't do.
It depends to a certain degree upon what the type of entitlement or permit is that you want to transfer. For the most part, conditional use permits, special permits, site plans, things of that nature are not transferable. They run with the land. More specifically, as I articulated a little while ago, they're adjudicatory permits, meaning that to approve them or not to approve them requires specific findings. Those findings require a public hearing and a public notice to the properties around them. To the extent that agencies have attempted to try to streamline that process and not give notice, there have been successful lawsuits for violation of due process to the adjacent property owners for the property rights that they have and not receiving notice of the entitlements issued in the form of special permits. So for the most part, I think it would be a little difficult to have some kind of streamlined process to remove those from property to property without those kinds of processes put in place. But having said that, there are other permits that are ministerial in nature we very much could look at to see whether that's possible. And certainly in the context of the environmental realm, we could attempt to streamline some of those processes for you.
Okay. And so the council could, if the majority said we want to give you some direction to look at those sort of things, that's something that we could give tonight that wouldn't necessarily affect the ordinances that are before us tonight, correct?
Most definitely.
Okay. And I think, Miriam, you had touched on that a little bit, so I'm just trying to make sure. There's been a lot of great comments and a lot of things we're really trying to work through, and I want people to understand that we're not ignoring you. We're trying to be thoughtful in our deliberations and being considerate of everyone's concerns. And I know that folks have talked about generation of the revenue, but I'll just say from my standpoint, while there would be a benefit, when we first started down this road, we had talked about this being a growth industry. There were some compassionate parts to this and trying to be a leader and do this and make sure that people understand we are talking about legal businesses operating with legal licenses in accordance with the specifications, code requirements, and all the other things that are being put in place by this city council. So let's see. I think Mr. Michelotta had brought up the question regarding existing businesses that are with 100 feet of those properties, and maybe staff, we can take a look into that. And then also, it's always very troublesome when people come up and say they did not get notification, so maybe we can just double check that as we move forward. Anyone else have any other council members have anything that members of the community brought up that I may have missed? And want to get further clarification on it?
I did see a question, and Constance, and I apologize, I didn't write down her last name, but she did speak about alcohol, and maybe this is a question for our fire chief with regards to, yes. Was the alcohol product that she was discussing a level 2 solvent, and or have you encountered this discussion as part of your research?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Steve Lieberman, Fire Chief. Mr. Lee, I'm trying to remember how many questions you just asked me. So let me take a shot at it. Alcohol is a flammable liquid. So we would be consulting the California Fire Code that would regulate use and storage of alcohol. Ethanol, in its form that's been explained to us in the closed-loop system, is a winterization process that's used at a very low temperature, and that's why we were advocating and supporting that that section of the ordinance. Again, alcohol is not currently considered at the level that the speaker raised earlier.
Okay.
Thank was you. There, I'm sorry, sir, was there another question?
Just is that alcohol a level 2 solvent, or is it just...
Yes, it's so a flammable liquid.
It's flammable, so it is in that level 2. And mm-hmm. from what the speaker was mentioning, it sounds like the product would be in its... would be used in its flammable state from what I understood. So unlike ethanol, which you said is more in its winterization state.
I heard the speaker talk about the proof, the alcohol content of the liquid itself. I was unsure of the process, so we can look into it, or perhaps that person could enlighten us a little bit more.
Okay.
We're learning from the industry folks every day.
Okay.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? So I did want to go back to one thing, though. I had kind of asked this question earlier, and I didn't press, but I do want at this point, because I will say, as we started down in this endeavor and looking at regulating these uses versus, you know, taking the head-in-the-sand approach, or prohibiting everything, that, you know, we've tried to be very careful in how we do this. And so the thing I have heard, and I've said this, and I'm not changing my position regarding, it is certainly not government's place to tell a private property owner who to sell to or whom to sell to and not to sell that property for what it would bear. Now, that said, I saw a statement in the environmental document that talked about these rigorous standards. I think it talked about special technology and things that would encourage folks to look to more vacant lots than existing buildings. So I'm just trying to, it says special indoor needs and technologies would lead to most applicants pursuing vacant lots. So I want to just kind of, fact check it. I want to ground truth that. I want to make sure, because I do understand that there are folks who are making offers on land, and I'm not saying that you can't do that, and I'm not saying that the owner can't choose to sell. I just want to know, and I know, staff, you've talked about existing buildings would need to comply, be brought up to meet current uniform building plumbing codes and things of that nature, correct? And then I think there was also a section where you were talking about, does the council give you direction to come back with design standards and things of that nature?
A couple of answers. First of all, I can't find the exact language that you're using, but I believe it was in regards to the water consumption analysis. There was, I think this was confirmed by our consultant and discussions as well. If you were going to have a grow facility of 22,000 square feet, in order to meet today's technologies and so forth, it's less likely that you would rehab an existing metal building. Not to mention, we just don't have very many buildings that are of 22,000 square feet. So for the water consumption analysis, CEQA required us to come up with a reasonable estimate of the amount of growers and therefore the amount of water consumption. And so in this section, we looked at the number of vacant lots, and then we made an assumption that if 50% of those were used by commercial cannabis uses in general, and then 50% of those were actually cultivation uses, that's how the NEGDEC discusses how we ultimately worked back to the reasonable amount of water consumption for cultivation uses.
Okay.
The second question regarding design standards, yes, the council directed staff to come back with design standards for industrial buildings in all zones, and staff will begin working on that and bring that back to the council this summer. However, on May 15th, we're also going to be bringing the next implementation steps, which will touch on development standards and a little bit on design as well.
Okay. Okay. Miriam, you have comments? You want to?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we're going in a certain order, but I mean, first and foremost, I would like to address the school issue if we want to jump in there.
Sure. Why don't you do that?
one reason I asked the question in the beginning, if we could just grandfather this school, is as many speakers stated, I like that we mirror much of the state ordinance and state regulation, and I don't necessarily like the thought of us trying to reinvent something that probably the state has already spent a lot of time crafting. That being said, I think throughout this entire process, all of us have said we're Grover Beach, and there are going to be certain times when, you know, something is uniquely Grover Beach. And I'm not sure how old the school is, but my son goes there. I mean, it's been there forever. I've had my hair cut by people, grown adults who went there. So whether or not it's a school by definition, I think it should be subject to the 600-foot the 600-foot protection, especially because I don't think that's going to negatively affect new businesses in that great of a way, because it's only storefronts and or dispensaries. One reason I did not want to increase the definition is because I also know of people who start a Montessori school out of their home at a certain time, and it may just be they're between jobs, and I don't want to necessarily increase the definition that all of a sudden we have many different schools popping up. So that was where I was going with that.
Okay. Barbara, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, are you talking about the Dandelion School or
yes.
the Montessori?
It's the same.
Oh, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So there's, don't think there's two parts to that, because I think what staff is saying is that this private school or program is not necessarily fit neatly into the state definition of schools. And do you want to expand it to include that? I think the other part is, I think you're right, Miriam, is if we expand it and schools start popping up, then obviously it becomes counterproductive. So how do we, and I think the council has in the past said we want to treat the Dandelion School, as a school. I think we've said that. I think there was a consensus. But you're right. How do we figure out to grandfather them in so that we don't have a situation where others start having schools in proximity to this particular area? Bruce, you have something?
I'm going to defer to the city attorney and how we would grandfather this in, but I would add that the school definition that we that staff provided in the staff report, we would modify. We would recommend, if you were going to adopt that definition, that you modify it to include, but does not include, any private school in which education is primarily conducted in private homes, partly to do what you mentioned, Councilmember Shaw. And that language I just gave you is verbatim out of state law. So we would recommend that you add that if you were going to go with a definition of school.
Okay. Anything else?
Do you think that definition would get us there to including Dandelion Montessori?
Yes. I mean, staff is not an expert, and as the owner mentioned, there is some criteria on the state website that says, is it a program or is it a school? And it gives you a number of questions, and staff can't answer that. Again, staff took this just upon an abundance of caution, that if you want to make sure this Montessori school will meet that 600-foot requirement, you may not be able to rely on state law. You may have to broaden the definition, as we're suggesting.
Okay. I'm just not sure. I mean, when we leave tonight, so, will this school be a school, I guess?
We're going to make sure this is the council majority is in agreement with us. I think staff, you've obviously worked up some language, and we'll consider that as we go through this process. So, Mary, do you have anything else?
Actually, before we leave that item, can I ask if Bruce would put up a map of the 600-foot setback, if you would, please?
Thank you.
Okay. So, and I know this was a... Mr. Mayor, please accept my apologies if I'm going backwards in some of our discussions. So that is a map that isn't that's not a curved map. It's basically so it looks like the lower left-hand corner is that 600 feet from the Montessori school as well. So, or is this a parcel exemption, for lack of a better term? So, obviously the boundaries are such that you probably did a 600 foot setback from each of the corners. But when we do land use maps, are not the corners typically rounded?
Yes, this was prepared in-house, and I won't say it's 100% accurate, but again, we would follow the state definition, which is measured from boundary of the school to boundary of the lot. So, yes, you would have more of a circular line here. What we're trying to depict is that if it touches any section of the lot, then that lot would not be eligible.
And that's kind of where I was potentially going with the discussion is – if you look at the parcel above the I for industrial,
right there.
So the intent of that setback would be that that entire parcel would not be allowed to have dispensaries only. If I'm understanding it correctly, so it'd be that entire parcel could not have a dispensary.
Correct.
Okay, it could have other potential cannabis uses, but not a dispensary.
Dispensaries and cultivation with storefronts.
Right, sorry.
Hold on. City Attorney, would you like to
Yeah,
contribute?
That's correct. It only applies to cultivation with a storefront and dispensaries. Dispensaries being retail are almost always going to have a storefront. Cultivation is very iffy. In fact, most of them will not. So really the primary use that would be applicable here or affected would be dispensaries.
Okay. So I guess the next question I've got is if it's potentially not an accurate map, then the parcel directly to the west of that, which has that little, the one below, that one, where your cursor is. So that would be a not allowed dispensary or cultivation with storefronts as well, if I'm reading that correctly. So going back to one of our first discussions is, can we do a effective setback, for lack of a better term, and put them to the property lines so that yeah. entire parcel is in, but it's the intent of a 600-foot setback is still maintained.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So under state law, if it is a school, it's a 600-foot setback as measured from boundary to boundary. The city could not make that more lenient. However, in something that's not defined as a school under state law, the council has the ability to set any parameters it would like.
So if the definition, I think you said it well.
No, I know where you're going. I see where you're going, and perhaps we do need to look and see those, the one where you had the red dot and the three above it, mm-hmm. when the vast majority complied, do you draw it back to the property line?
And that's kind of where one of our initial discussions were. And so going back towards the definition of a school, if we acknowledge the value of the school program and provide the opportunity, which is kind of been always one of my monikers throughout this process, is we provide an opportunity for people to have a legitimate business if we were to move the boundary setback to the property line, so that the entirety of those properties would be in the zone, including for dispensaries and cultivation with storefronts, but it still maintains the intent of the setback from the Montessori.
Okay. What do the other council members think of that?
I think the three parcels that are split there was just a tiny little area in the white. I don't think that's fair to the property owners at all to have that as part of the setback. And I think it's far enough away from the school that it would not have any real effect one way or the other. It looks like a much deeper area than I expected it to look, considering how many blocks up the school is.
Okay. I think it would be fine to just go to the property line if we can, you know, work out the language and make sure that that is documented, because any dispensary is going to face Griffin. So you would think any activity would be toward the front, probably toward the front of the property. So I think that still ensures, you know, the things that a school might be concerned about, traffic, people coming in and out, to remain as it would with the same 600, with the same setback. It would be, I hate to decide this when our own staff has told us this is not an accurate map, so I hate to base it on that.
So I think there just needs to be some refinement. I think we have a majority that says of those four, three plus that small,
right, and
the entire parcel needs to be in. So I guess that just means that we need to stay flexible in our definition, but right, recognizing that the Montessori school is there, and we do want to have setback, but we also are trying to be fair to those property owners. I think that's a direction that can be given.
It's kind of unclear here. They're called the Andy Lion Daycare on the map with sensitive use map. So that makes it a little bit more of a question mark.
Yeah, I think that map,
as far as holding really tight to the 600 feet rule.
Yeah, I think that was a typo, because I think when we went back through that last time, that was pointed out, and it's never been called. I write the checks to Dandelion Montessori.
Okay. So I think it's pretty clear where the council wants to go with this. Is basically, we don't want to rule those four properties out. They need to be ruled in, and I just think there needs to be some refinement on that. I think we are certainly not saying let's go down the road of broadening the definition. We want to keep the flexibility and just recognizing that Dandelion is a program that we want to make sure that we have adequate buffer and safety measures in place. I see legal counsel. What if we can get legal counsel to fidget a square and we're doing a job? So,
just from a point of discussion, I think it's five parcels. So it's the four vertical ones and then the one just above the eye in industrial. So it's one, two, three, four. Am I counting those correctly? So there's the...
Yeah. Is that split?
I think you guys get the gist. You guys understand where we're going. Okay.
Yeah, three of them horizontally are split.
Actually.
Yeah.
But just want to make sure.
Legal counsel.
I'm seeing five, but...
We're
getting... We're splitting
hairs. I believe. Yeah, you started this, but I'm going to rein you back there. City attorney, what do you have?
I believe what I'm understanding or hearing you say is the four parcels, of which part of it is split where the red dot is going up and down. You want to allow dispensaries on those parcels as long as it's outside of the 600-foot boundary. Is that what you're saying? Let me, my heartburn with that, to be frank, is under Business and Professions Code 19322. It basically says that the application for a cultivator or dispenser with a storefront has to be at least 600-foot radius from a school pursuant to 11362-768 of the Health Safety Code. That code says that the distance specified in the section shall be a horizontal distance measured in a straight line from the property line of the school to the closest property line of the lot on which the medical marijuana cooperative, collective, dispensary, et cetera, et cetera, is going to be located. So functionally, once it goes over that property line, again, there's lots of state regulations that have just been released. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we haven't had an opportunity because of the just recently having seen them released, to have gone through them and looked at them to see if there's anything in this regards. But when I did contact the in-house counsel for the Food and Drug Administration, their position was they do consider that 600-foot setback does apply to schools for both cultivation and dispensaries. I guess I'm saying we proceed with caution. We probably need to get some more research done in the context of the recent regulations that have been released, make more phone calls to have those discussions. So I just say we may need to noodle on that one a little bit.
I would just say in that regard, as you do the research, I know there's a list of factors of is it a school and or isn't it, and Mr. Buckingham said, you know, it's a list of criteria. If maybe there can be a meeting with the owner of the school and really hammer out or get the documentation from her, so as you're in the research process, we know if this isn't a school and we're crafting something, that's one thing. If this for sure is a school, then we're bound to another set of rules.
Oh, that's a very astute point. I mean, to the extent that we conclude it's not a school, you're not bound by this statute. So therefore, for the purposes of creating this setback that you'd like, you could define your direction to staff to include it to go along that property line of those properties, and you're not bound to the 600-foot setback.
That is correct. I think that's where we were trying to go. Right. So it's okay. So now that we're all on the same page on that, I'm going to let's back up. Let's take a step back. Let me get you some structure here. Let's deal with the resolution on the negative declaration, because until we make a decision on that, we can't move forward on the other items. So does anyone have any questions or any concerns with the negative declaration as presented? Any questions of our of the team? I mean, if not, would someone like to maybe make a motion on the resolution dealing with the negative declaration?
I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution adopting the negative declaration.
And I'll second that.
Okay. All right. So we've got a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the resolution or the document? We do a roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. And Mayor Schultz.
Yes. Motion carries. Okay. So now let's move to the land use, which is where we jump forward to on this. So I think we've sufficiently discussed the Dandelion School and keeping our flexibility to allow to be able to rule in those the lots we talked about and maintain a safe distance, and would there be other protections? Correct. Was there anything else in the land use ordinance staff that you felt needed some further clarification on?
No, sir.
Okay. Would this be the section where we might have a discussion of, I know we had talked about limiting the number of dispensaries. We hadn't talked about limiting the number of the square footage or whatnot of cultivation or other activities. Would this be the appropriate time to have that conversation if, in fact, that was where the council wanted to go?
I believe it would be, Mayor. You know, again, some of the other agencies that I've worked for, we've established canopy caps related to cultivation. It's been done based upon water impacts, so that the limitation of the amount of canopy or the size or square foot of canopy that you're going to allow with aggregate amount that you're going to allow within the city was based upon creating a project that didn't create a significant impact in the context of water usage. So, yes, this would be the time to do it. I'm just not sure what that number would be. And maybe I can defer to Bruce. Bruce might have a better understanding of that. But for the most part, if it's tied into water usage and it's tied into a concept that amount or that cap, anything below that would not create a significant impact to water usage, then I've seen that done on a number of occasions. I'm just not sure what that number would be at this point.
Okay.
I'll wade into that. No water pun intended. So I think one of the discussions that we had when we were generating the Measure L language was that the canopy square foot fee was going to be almost like a self-limiting mechanism for cultivators. And as I've been meeting with people in the industry, that has been one of the things that they've brought up is $25 for the first, 5,000 square feet of canopy for that tax is going to make it necessary for them to put in safeguards to use less water or to be a very boutique type of strain that that their yields are going to be more attractive for the industry in terms of cost. In my opinion, that kind of limiting factor or that cost of tax revenue for the industry is going to be the limiting limiter on the capacity of the size of our cultivation areas. So I don't know if I'm obviously willing to listen to numbers, but I think the ordinance itself is going to be the driving force behind that, and I don't think we need to put in a limiting upper limit at this point, because I think that again that's going to be industry generated or industry driven towards that.
Barbara or Miriam, any thoughts?
I think Jeff has a valid point. It might end up being more industry regulated than what we would choose or try to just make a decision on to begin with.
Okay.
Yeah, I would hate to start putting numbers and limitations tonight on an industry that has not yet even begun to be here. So we're just not, so much is unknown. And that's why I was asking that question in the beginning about this process. And if we just hit a point where maybe every parcel doesn't have medical marijuana, but we feel as a city we're saturated. And I think there are safeguards within the ordinance for that, and there also we can go back and amend the ordinance when we need to. But I know one of our goals when we got working on this was to get those vacant parcels developed and get underdeveloped parcels developed, and it's such a unique area. I don't want to put any other hoops on there unless we see that they're necessary.
Okay. So my I would say that I was originally one who said, hey, let's let the market dictate what goes in. But as I look at the water demand and the way this is calculated out in the negative declaration, and I want to read this, there's one line that says, if we assume that half of the land, and I think we're talking about vacant lots, is subject to commercial cannabis permit applications, and further assume that half of the application areas become subject to cultivation, an assumption consistent with, it refers to a Calkins, looks like a report, then the total area subject to indoor cultivation would be just over 185,000 square feet. So I'm trying to figure out, rather than just giving an arbitrary number, if water demand is really dictate an issue, then maybe we do need to try and find a way to tie a maximum number to water demand, and then if that doesn't be the case, we can look at increasing that. That's kind of what my thought is, and I don't know. I saw the consultant shaking his head, and maybe if you can just confirm, am I reading this out of context? Am I going down a very conservative path? Because I know the community will ask about water, even though we had a very wet season. I'm trying to find things that are tangible and that can be supported with facts and data.
Mr. Chairman, you did accurately summarize the way we put together the water estimates in the initial study and negative declaration. It would take a little bit more arithmetic to add in some numbers and come up with a precise number of how many cultivation permits would be involved there. But I'll just leave it at that. You can always calculate more, and you can always get a consultant to spew more numbers out, so it's probably not necessary to go too much more into it.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So that was just an idea I had. I'm just one member, so I will, you know, I think you've all made very valid points, so however you all want to proceed, I just wanted to make sure I put that out there for consideration and discussion.
I was thinking about some of those same concerns, but I know every applicant is going to have to include a water plan, mm-hmm. which we'll review. And also, I think just as the city attorney informed us earlier, one factor we're going to consider is impact on the area. So I think during the process, water would come up, and I would assume that every cultivator would have to give us a good background on water, and we would be appraised at what our water situation is. So In my mind, I thought the situation, the process would take care of that. But I would like to hear what other people think.
Actually, I'm along the lines of what Mayor Pro Tem Shaw is saying as well. And then as we were going through the discussion with the gentleman from RINCON, the other aspect fell into my brain with regards to cultivation. Obviously, has a generated business activity where one of the elements that we've been talking about is the opportunity to have manufacturing mm-hmm. in here, which has its ability to have a as with the cultivation, it's going to have a security plan, it's going to have its building footprint, it's going to be inside facilities, and so but it's also going to be less visible. I mean, if you walk into a cultivation area, you're going to see plants. So if you walk into a manufacturing facility, you're going to see much less product, and you're going to see much less or much more industrial sorts of activities. And so that was another reason for my perspective to have a little bit of a higher tax rate for cultivation to encourage the actual manufacturing, which is what this industry, with what this zone is intended for. Just for discussion purposes, if we look at the table that staff put together on page 7 of the staff report regarding water demand, there is a cultivation area in square feet that corresponds to a series of acre feet demand for that. And I'm seeing about 220,000 area in square feet yield somewhere between 13 and 16 acre feet per year. So if we, let's say we capped industry water use for cultivation at 10 acre feet per year, is that a starting point to where it allows activity to commence, but it provides that first upper level review, but from, and it gives something to kind of metric against as applications are coming forward.
Yeah, good point.
Kind of does both.
So then instead of placing an artificial cap, we'll just take a look at each application and obviously measure it against the water allocation for us. Mr. Buckingham.
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, as cultivations come online and we can monitor their water usage, which will be part of the water recycling management plan, we could report that back to the council. But if the council just wants to direct staff that once we approach 100,000 square feet of cultivation, that you'd like for us to come back and discuss the water consumption that's being used, so then you could determine if you want to make a change to the ordinance. We can just simply monitor it.
Okay. I think that's a good.
I think there's consensus on that. Okay. Was there anything else in the actual land use ordinance that anyone had any?
One thing that was suggested was right now the process for looking at this land use permit would be that it will go to the Planning Commission and it will then come to us. And it was, I think staff asked, do we want to change that process? And my instinct would be no, but I just wanted us to address that and see what other people thought.
Barbara, any thought?
No, I don't see any problem with that.
Okay. Jeff?
And I don't see a problem with it. I think
the discussion, if I recall previously, was the length of time that it might add to a process. But it sounds like the way the approach is moving forward is that the land use, either way, whether it goes through the Planning Commission or comes directly to us, has an opportunity to get to us first with the regulatory permit potentially moving, taking longer to be able to accomplish. And so as long as, and yet there's safeguards in the ordinance that if the land use gets to us first, that the city manager is then the first review of authority for the regulatory. So I think I'm okay with the Planning Commission, what I'm making the recommendation to the council. I think the potential that we had was, or the concern, potential concern we had was that we would be overwhelming mm-hmm. our Planning Commission by that. But I think we can change that if that does become the case.
Okay.
Staying on that page, though, which is actually page 7 of the land use ordinance, it's section 4.10.045. As I was reading it, I'm looking specifically at paragraphs B and C. The review authority, it says the council is authorized to approve use permits, and then in the permit requirements, it says a use permit shall be approved and so forth. As I've been going through all of these, I know we've got the use permit and then we have the commercial cannabis permit, but in my own brain, I'm calling them both use permits. So I'm wondering if we could just add language to under the review authority, the council is authorized to approve land use permits, basically inserting the word land in both paragraphs B and C where appropriate to kind of differentiate between the two. Maybe it's a semantical change, but it helped me to differentiate between the land use permit and the commercial cannabis permit.
Okay. So I think that's a minor change. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Just going back to the discussion about greenhouses, where with regards to and Bruce, can you bring up your, I forget which attachment it is, but it's the one that has the exhibit for the building.
I don't have the overhead for the mixed light building that was provided in the staff report package.
Okay, gotcha. So I think, so if I understood our discussion a little bit earlier, was that effectively the exterior of the building would be a stick built, completely enclosed structure, so with the opportunity for a mixed light roof. So just want to make sure that if we go in that direction, do we need to just add a definition that identifies that, or is there a definition that's adequate in the ordinance? More of a logistical question, because there's not a definition here. There's a definition in the regulatory one, mm-hmm. but not in the land use.
I believe that there is a definition for mixed light building in the state code.
There is.
In the state code.
In okay, state so, codes, there are.
So
yes.
So we basically defer to that.
And we do okay. defer to that in the ordinance.
Can, okay. Do you have that at your fingertips by chance?
So you're looking for just the definition of greenhouse, or are you looking at the...
I think it was the mixed light building.
Oh,
I
mixed
think
light?
What Mr. Hale had referenced.
Yeah, I was just looking at it there recently.
But the ordinance is written, as written, would not prohibit mixed light buildings. It would just, they would be allowed with certain requirements. Regarding light and during certain hours.
Yeah, the clarification was we didn't want to have glare being produced all night. And yeah. So the clarification was for the grow areas, windows, or the roof. In other words, if someone wants to operate an office, that's not the issue of having office lights on. This is high-powered lights on at night.
Yeah, I'm seeing under development standards, section G, paragraph 3, or item 3, all cultivation and nursery uses shall be within an enclosed building. Cultivation and nursery uses are prohibited outdoors.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of making sure that we understand what the state allows for an enclosed building.
Okay. So I think you can add the definitions, make sure they're consistent from one ordinance to the other. Let's not wordsmith everything tonight.
Right.
So let's get to the issue of, I think the ordinance prohibits greenhouses. Is the council majority okay with that? I know, Jeff, you had brought that up previously.
It's I'm okay with the moving forward with that, as long as the mixed light building is consistent with the state law interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we'll just make sure they give staff that direction. I think
right.
we can. That's something they can bring back in the second reading.
Yep.
Okay. If there's no other items, is someone going to try a motion? On this ordinance?
I can go ahead and do that. So I'd like to make a motion that we conduct the first reading by title only and introduce the ordinance amending Article 3 and the ordinance amending Article 9 of the Gower Beach Municipal Code. Oops, am I doing both? Actually, it looks like this is the...
Is this Article 9?
No, this is... Bear with me.
Attorney.
I believe this one's Article 3. No, this is Article 9. Okay, so then I will conduct a first reading by title only and introduce the ordinance amending Article 9 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to allow the establishment of commercial cannabis uses for the cultivation, manufacturing, dispensation, transportation, distribution, and testing of medical marijuana and medical marijuana products with minor changes as outlined by adding the word land in paragraphs section 4.10.045 B and C.
Okay.
And I guess it would be a separate resolution for the second reading.
Okay, so that is basically, so there is a motion on just the land use at this time.
At this point.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, it's a roll call.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. Motion carries. Okay, let's move to, I think, Article 3. This is basically what we're talking about, repealing Chapter 1.2, Article 3, and then we are... adding Chapter 18, Article 3, to allow the establishment, operation, and regulations of commercial cannabis uses for the cultivation, manufacturing, dispensation, transportation, and testing of medical marijuana and medical marijuana products. Any questions, any comments?
I do have several, but I can either go now or at your pleasure.
Barbara, you have anything?
No.
Okay. Miriam?
I have a few things. One thing that concerns me a little bit is the process, because the land use ordinance will go to the Planning Commission and then go to us. And if the regulatory application is prepared at the same time, that will come to us. But if it's not ready at the same time, it will only go to the city manager. And I'm just wondering, I just feel like even if that regulatory portion is not going to come to us, there should be an opportunity for the public to comment, like maybe go to the Planning Commission or something. And I wanted to see what other people thought about that.
So, so city manager, would you like to clarify what that process will be, that you'll be doing an administrative process?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. It will be an administrative process that will be submitted concurrently with the land use permit application process. And I should add that we're going to be specifying more information about the application process at the May 15th meeting, including a flow chart that will show every step of the way in both processes. But in general, correct, it's an administrative process. I'll be working on the process along with the police chief. We'll be conducting that as the community development department is conducting the land use process, and then ultimately we'll be approving that within the staff level if the use permit has been approved by the council and that's already been taken care of. And ultimately, there will be an appeal process for any decision that the manager makes that ultimately could be appealed to the council. So that is a typical administrative process. There is not a built-in public component to that process. Unless it's appealed to the council, then ultimately there would be a public process at that point. Ultimately, it's up to the council to provide policy direction on how that process looks, and if the council feels that should be a process kept within the council or planning commission, staff would be amenable to the council's direction on how that process were to unfold.
So, good question. I think maybe there is an administrative use permit process, correct, Mr. Buckingham?
Yes, there is.
So, I mean, maybe that could be the model in which if there is a application made to the city manager, it could be an administrative process where you would notify certain property owners, and then within 300 feet, let's say, and then he would have because I think you would have a meeting so that the public could come and raise concerns. That way he's taking that information in before making a decision.
Yeah. An administrative use permit is a hearing that is held typically in the afternoon in city halls. We do notice all property owners within 300 feet, and we do allow public comment at those meetings prior to rendering a decision. That decision made by myself then is allowed to be appealed to the Planning Commission and then subsequently to the City Council. The only unique thing here is the regulatory or the commercial cannabis permit is more of a regulatory permit, not a land use permit, because we're looking at backgrounds and other instances that are not necessarily specific to land use experience.
Okay. And I believe you were talking about coming on back on the 15th, really kind of laying out how these processes all interconnect and flow, correct?
I mean, the distinction that Mr. Buckingham made is absolutely correct in the context of a difference between regulatory and a land use permit. Having said that, there's nothing that precludes the establishment, I'll use the word promulgate, of regulations, which this ordinance clearly allows city manager to do, of that process, administrative process for that permit, to in fact require noticing of the neighbors within a certain radius so that they would have the ability to make an appearance at that time. It wouldn't necessarily be a public hearing per se, but they could come and voice their concerns and or have the opportunity to appeal or know about it in the event that they wanted to appeal it, and give them that ability to do that. So that you do have the discretion to do that.
Okay. And you could batch those. So I think there's a process that could be adapted to, and it should not be too difficult a process. I think that does make sense, and maybe staff, as you come back on the May 15th, we can kind of just lay out what those processes are so everybody understands exactly what the process is going to be going forward on, not just the land use, but on the regulatory part of this. Okay.
I think my only other comments, and I think that they will probably be more appropriate for next time, but I want to make them just in case I don't want to vote on something and then, oh, well, that's decided. A couple things that are important to me to be included in this regulatory application process is I do want to know, capitalism's going to happen, but if local businesses are displaced, I want to know what that process was, how those businesses were treated. I'm trying to avoid the, if it's a factor in the application, maybe people wouldn't say you're evicted tomorrow. Maybe they would do things in a professional manner. I would like to know about that at some point, and maybe that's a better discussion for May 15th. The other things that I think are important are some of the fees coming in, regulatory fees, some of that money going to streetlights, possibly cameraing all of the zones, not just business owners protecting their own business. But I know we heard comments about, what about us in this industrial area? And I think they're taking a chance, not that they have, you know, a ton of choice about it, but they're taking a chance in remaining in this area and letting a new business come in. And I think we should in turn make sure that's the, one of the safest areas in the city. And maybe that's, you know, using some regulatory fees and charging some regulatory fees to get that entire area camera'd, to get maybe an extra patrol officer that just focuses on those areas. So these are things that I don't know, probably we'll discuss May 15th, but I didn't want to miss the opportunity if somehow voting today would change that.
So I would say voting today will not change that. Staff will be coming back, and I think the discussion will be what the process is for land use and the regulatory. I believe you've also talked about resources and what we're looking at. I'm going to let the attorney weigh in on. I just say, as a person who in a former life used to do these processing permits and things of that nature, putting a requirement on how someone treated a tenant or whatnot as a factor in whether they're issued a permit or not starts to weigh into some major legal territory, and I don't think we want to go down that road. I'll let you respond to that.
You have me squirming again.
That's my job. Our job.
Basically, the findings that are typically found with a use permit deal with functional effects related to or part of the city's overall police power authorities. So functionally, when you look at whether a particular building is or use is compliant with your zoning, is compliant with your local plans, your specific plans, your general plans, those kinds of things, that's part and part of your function of your police power authorities. To the extent that you deny or you approve a conditional use permit based on whether it's detrimental to the public health and safety, again, goes directly to the heart of your public health, of your police power authorities granted to you under the Constitution of the State of California. What you're asking is more really infusing the city into what is otherwise a market issue of buyer and seller. There are, as we well know, folks, and I'm not talking necessarily about the industry, marijuana industry, who have the ability to go in and buy and sell property, and in doing so may displace people in the process. Apartments for years have been converted to condos in the process. People were displaced because of that, but developers went in and did it, and it was entirely legal. To infuse that kind of market type, commerce type of condition into a conditional use permit as a factor or a finding in your decision making would be something that would probably start to raise my heartburn level a little bit.
Well, thank you for that answer, because I know we've heard a lot of good suggestions from well, what seem like good suggestions to me but are not legal, about, you know, taking these things into effect and taking whether or not someone's a local person into effect. And I think as we go forward and discuss this in more detail, it's important to let people know things we just can't do in that vein to protect businesses, even though we may want to.
So. If there are legitimate, I mean, sort of a rule of thumb, if there are legitimate governmental interest involved in the decision-making or in the factors you use to make those decisions, then it certainly would be something that we would consider. But infusing yourself into the middle of what is otherwise a commerce or market-related issue of the relationship between a buyer and seller in terms of displacement, for instance, I think is questionable as to whether it falls within that rule of thumb. Certainly relocation and things like that, when redevelopment agencies went in there and did it, statutory authority was, in fact, requirements to pay for relocation expenses and costs associated with the space displacement. But that was because the agency was going in and through their powers, police powers, were displacing them. You're not displacing anybody here. It's the market out there that's functionally doing that. So that would give me a little pause if we start infusing ourselves into that private market or commerce issue.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. So that's all my questions coming.
Okay. Sure. So to comment on that just a little bit, I've when people have asked me that question with regards to displacement and so forth, I've kind of spoken about the lease agreement that they have, if they're not the property owner, that the lease agreement that they have with the property owner to be there, and the rights that are in those lease agreements give them the authority or the right or the power to make sure that they protect themselves. And so someone with a month-to-month lease is going to have much less opportunity to than someone who has a 5 or a 10 year lease that has buyout clauses or something of that nature. So, again, going back to the opportunity of this business, there is protection that each of the business owners hopefully have with whatever leases that they have in on the private market. So towards questions and potential changes, updates, or so forth, I want to start with Section 4040, which is on page 9 of the ordinance, and I may bounce around because I didn't bookmark my pages as cleanly as I typically do, but we'll start at 4040. It's licenses and permits. It's paragraph 2. It talks about the extension application for renewal of permits, and the last line there, I'd like to change some language there. That reads, the permit's term will be extended for 90 days if a renewal application is timely submitted and the city, by its own negligence or malfeasance, fails to renew by the expiration date. I'd like to at least change negligence and malfeasance, because us not getting to a timely renewal is I don't think goes to negligence or malfeasance. So I'd like to try and change that to read something along the lines of the permit's term will be extended until the city makes a decision on whether to renew the permit or something of that nature. So basically the business would then continue to operate until we as a city make a determination, not a date of that, I mean, which then encourages us to make the determination as timely as possible. So,
what item was that?
It's 4040, licenses and permits, section A, paragraph 2.
Page?
Page 9. I don't have any language. I can come up with some language for discussion. It would be the permits term will be extended until such time as the city by its own or on its own volition renews or denies the permit.
Okay. Keep going.
Okay. So next one is 4060, and this is just a kind of a nuance item in it's on page 12, subparagraph B. I've always had this, it's just a philosophical bent of forcing someone to wear something approximately chest high, if the card. If we can just make it visible on the exterior of the clothes at a prominent and readily visible location on the outermost garment. So just get rid of an approximately chest high. So if someone wants to put it on their belt, that's fine. So, and that's just my thought there. Then the next one goes to 4,210. Before we leave there, there's an inconsistency, I think, on page 13 of the ordinance under 4080. In the title of that, it says location of commercial cannabis business 100 foot setback from residential zones. So this doesn't
specify. I deleted that already.
Okay, perfect. Okay, cool. Thank you. And then, so the next one you may have already caught as well, it has to do with sections 210 and 220. It has to do with, and bear with me as I get there, It has to do with the Ag Commissioner and the County Health. There was a letter that was provided by County Health that had, and I just want to make sure that we're consistent with that language, because it looks like it hadn't been changed. I'm looking on page 23 of the ordinance. Looks like section 4,210, paragraph C, actually B and C, with regards to the Ag Commissioner and the County Health Agency. So just want to make sure that we're consistent with the letter that Dr. Bornstein had provided.
Okay.
And then the last item is 4,220, I believe it is, operating requirements for cultivation and nurseries. And I think, again, this is just a consistency issue between the land use and the regulatory, is that the last line of paragraph A says the use of greenhouses will be prohibited in all zones of in all zone districts of the city. So I just want to make sure that if we, depending upon the research on the mixed light buildings, whether they're greenhouses, whether that is appropriate to stay or not. Let me make sure that I don't have any other.
Maybe we can get a point of clarification from the council on that. I think in terms of what Mr. Buckingham had mentioned, and he and I had talked about this previously, the concept from the staff's perspective was mixed-use light building would essentially have translucent type of panels on the roof, uh-huh, so that they could accommodate growth by using natural light, uh-huh, as opposed to being totally by artificial lighting. But nothing in the perimeter of the building would be like a greenhouse where you could see through it for right. Two reasons. One, security, and two, so that it's not visible to the general public walking down the street.
Okay.
So if that's the intent of the council and the direction, then I think that's already covered in the ordinances in the context of what a mixed-use light building constitutes.
Okay. Then those are the items and clarifications that I have.
Okay. So I think we've got comments from Miriam and Barbara. Jeff, you have quite a few, so I would encourage you to make a motion with those clarifications and those changes and see if there is a council majority that agrees with you and we can give staff that direction.
Sounds like an opportunity to make a motion that we conduct the first reading by title only and introduce the ordinance amending Article 3. Let's see, make sure I read this correctly. Article 3 to make a motion that we read by title only the ordinance of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach repealing Chapter 1.2, Article 3, Medical Marijuana Dispensaries, and adding Chapter 18, Article 3 of the Grover Beach Municipal Code to allow the establishment, operation, regulation of commercial cannabis uses for the cultivation, manufacturing, dispensation, transportation, and testing of medical marijuana and medical marijuana products with the following changes. To section 4,040.
Hang on a sec before you, and I want you to go through that again.
Okay.
Staff, did you capture all of the items that Councilmember Lee had mentioned previously? Because I think I just want him to be able to make a motion that says the clarifications and amendments as stated.
And yes, I think
prior
we did.
Communication.
Then I will end that motion there. Then.
Very good.
I second.
Okay, there is a second. If there's no additional discussion, let's do roll call.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. And then I think we have a resolution that is directing the Community Development Director to submit to the local coastal implementation amendment associated with the ordinance, correct? Bruce, anything else you wanted to add to that? It looks like it's a pretty straightforward resolution. Don't want to try a motion on that one?
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt the resolution approving a local coastal program amendment.
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Councilmember Lee?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw?
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols?
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson is absent. And Mayor Scholes?
Yes. And so I think at this point, we do want to give some direction. I think there has been some discussion, and I want to see if there is a consensus from the council members. But before I do that, let me kind of back up And I want to make sure that everyone who is in the audience, who's listening, who understands that, and Miriam, just I want to address some of the comments you had brought, to just make sure that as we are going forward and businesses are coming forward, whether it's in an existing building or a new building, that they will be required to comply with building, fire, and safety codes, and that we do have code requirements that would require installation of sidewalks and other public improvements, which could include streetlights and sewer connection. So I want to make sure people understand that even though we haven't specifically addressed that tonight, code requirements are code requirements. Anyone opening a business or developing a piece of property must comply with those requirements unless they come to this body and request a waiver or that they request that they not apply. So just want to be certain on that. And I think we've also, as a council, looked at this area and said, are there other opportunities for this council to look at upgrades that it would improve public safety and things of that nature? And I think I want people to know that we don't take those things lightly, and that is something that will not be overlooked. So now let's get to the direction. Staff will be coming back on May 15th with the first and second reading of the ordinances that we approved today on the first reading. You will then come back with a discussion of what the permitting process looks like, City Manager Bronson?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. In addition to bringing forth the second reading of both ordinances for council adoption, we'll bring an implementation action item to the council. This will be a three-part item that will include a discussion on the development standards and seeking council's direction to expand on the conversation from tonight regarding sewer connections, fire life safety standards, street lights, and other key standards the council may wish to see and direct staff to further explore those. Secondly, we will bring forth the application process. We'll spell out the process more in detail. We'll have a flow chart that will map out every step of the way, building on your conversation tonight. We'll also include a resolution in this item so that council may wish to adopt the resolution and put that application in practice immediately upon adoption. And third, we'll bring forth the resource requirements, the further discussion around the costs for regulating the new industry in Grover Beach, and then the regulatory fee structure that we'd recommend be put in place. Both of those would be built into the budget for fiscal year 17-18, pending council's direction.
Okay, and then I would advocate and maybe see if there is a consensus to do this as to, and I know staff has done a lot of work, and want to say thank you for doing that work. And I know this is not easy. It has required a lot of research, a lot of talking with folks, and putting together an ordinance that regulates this business, but obviously has safeguards in place. And so we'll keep moving forward, and thank you for that work. I do believe that the discussion about existing businesses, while we certainly don't want to interject ourselves into the middle of a transaction between two private parties, I do believe that we should look for opportunities to assist existing businesses to the extent that we can legally do that. We don't have redevelopment. However, we could certainly designate that a portion of any fees raised be set aside in a fund that could be used, and we can specify what that looks like. I think I had mentioned a couple of points tonight that talked about grandfathering existing businesses, and I know that gives the city attorney some heartburn, but we have a smart, creative staff. I think there were some other points in that were submitted by folks that maybe we have a discussion about how we can assist some of those businesses to, if they're going to relocate in Grover Beach, I think we do need to find a way to help them get through the process in an expedited manner. And so let's give some direction for staff to start looking at that, and then we can address as much as we can that we would allow by law. City Attorney.
As a basic legal premise, I don't have any heartburn at all, and you certainly have the ability and authority to assist financially and otherwise for the attempt to keep displaced businesses within your community. That's not a gift of public funds. So that I don't have a concern with. I think what we need to noodle on is a source of revenues we're going to use
yes.
to assist them. or whatever means you wish to assist them. That's the only thing that I think we'll have to noodle a little bit on.
Yeah, I think, and it just given that direction to have that discussion.
And I definitely, I'm supportive of that as well. I mean, it goes without saying that I'm a proponent of the opportunity for the business, but I'm also very supportive and use a number of the businesses that are down in the industrial zone. So if some of the opportunities, again, trying to determine where the revenue is generated, could that be as far-reaching as waiving application fees or reducing application fees or some level of other opportunities to assist the existing businesses if they do relocate into Grover Beach. So from that standpoint, and another item, if I'd like to add to some of the direction that we give to staff is, I'm going to put my engineer hat on for a second here, and going towards the uniform development of streets, whether it be sidewalks, curbs, and gutters, and so forth. I know one in other areas of the city where a house develops and you have a curb, gutter, sidewalk, and then yard that goes 30 feet out into the street. I don't want to generate an area down in the industrial zones that where that is generated. So if, as part of the discussion, I'd like to see an opportunity for either packaging those improvements as they come forward into one project, perhaps some in coordination with our Measure K improvements, which I don't know if that becomes an in-lieu fee, and I don't know how we do that legally, but if there's an opportunity to do that so that we get the improvements built in as expeditious and efficiently manner as possible.
Well, I think we can maybe just have that conversation, because I think we did that when we were talking about the last set of streets, and we had identified this area as one that we would identify those streets as part of the next series of streets for K-14. So I think that's a discussion we're already doing. I don't think we want to create any special programs when, in fact, we're doing that. So maybe this starts to elevate that area as a priority. So that's a conversation that the council can have. Okay. Wow. So I guess for everyone who's watching, basically the first reading of the two ordinances has been approved tonight. And I think city attorney, looks like in your humble opinion, we'd be able to move forward with the second reading. And then I think the city manager laid out where we're going to be in the next meeting. So I was going to say, how do you guys feel? We're almost done. Do you want to power through? I know we have one closed session item tonight. Do you guys feel like taking a five-minute break?
No, let's just finish up.
I'm good proceeding. So I think.
All right, we're going to move on.
However, so I think our missing council member gets to join us again. Is that correct?
I think if she's watching, she will join us here shortly,
yes.
Hopefully. Well, let's just take a 5-minute break there.
Okay.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's Why don't you come?
Professionalism. Oh. Beautiful. I've been in business for over 40 years in Grover Beach. I'm retired now. Years ago, I've dealt with city council and mayors and rotating mayors. You know, it was a joke. I'm sorry. It's a joke. I got to the point where I no longer wanted to come to the meetings, the council meetings. Going, you guys have really hit me here. It's beautiful. So watch how. Do it the right way. You communicate. It's not the good old boy syndrome like it used to be.
Yes.
It's the way it should be, and I'm loving this.
Thank you. We appreciate
Thank you.
That. Absolutely. Have a good evening. Okay. So let's see. Where are we here? I think we are at council committee reports, correct?
Yes.
No regular business. We don't have any pool consent item. Council committee reports. K, Councilmember Peterson, you have anything you want to report tonight?
I do not, no.
Okay. Councilmember Nichols.
Yes. I was at the Chamber of Commerce lunch when our supervisor for District 4 gave us a very interesting discussion. Met the new city manager for Arroyo Grande. Had a great lunch. Community Action Partnership. Got two messages today. We've got everything under control budget-wise. It's all been okayed, and it looks like we're actually going to have some increased funding in two areas. So we're very happy.
Excellent.
And then South County Transit had their quarterly meeting, and a couple of months ago they had a rodeo with the bus drivers, and I would like to announce that all top winners were from South County Transit. And business goes on as usual, where we did budget work with them. And that's it.
Very good. Thank you. Councilmember Lee.
No reports to give tonight, but I do have a request potentially for Ms. Nichols as my alternate to the EVC. I'm finding myself about half the time starting to have a conflicting meeting. So I don't know if you would just want to take over that committee on my behalf, or just kind of work together and kind of participate with regards to I'll attend when I can and you attend when you can. I don't know if that's a discussion we need to have further. Or
what day do they meet?
They are the fourth Wednesday of each month in San Luis.
I could probably, I would prefer to do it when you can.
Yeah, so call her as the alternate. And,
yeah.
And then if it gets to the point, I guess we'll have to come back as a body and do a reassignment. We change, modify the resolution to change our rep.
Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
I had a meeting of the HSOC Homeless Services Oversight Committee, HSOCHSCC, I think. And mostly we talked about the Veterans Stand Down, which is coming up May 25th. I have this flyer. But it's a great event where it kind of was the impetus for all of the MASH events starting around the county, because it's a weekend-long event where veterans can go, they stay at the Veterans Center, they get haircuts, they get help, and now it's open to everyone who is homeless. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be transportation provided from Napomo, from Pismo, from Paso, Templeton, Atascadero, Santa Margarita. So it's going to be a great event. It's May 25th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And there's also going to be a bounce house for kids and other things like that. So anyone you know that may benefit. And that was, I think, the main thing discussed at that meeting. That's it.
Okay, very good. For me, there was... Oh, shoot. I accidentally called home. Anyway, Five Cities Fire Authority, you probably saw in the paper that there was a new fire engine has arrived. There was the wet down ceremony and a nice event. When was that? Was that
Friday?
Friday? Yeah.
No, I think it was Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah. That was fun.
Very good. And let's see, nothing on Slow Cog or the Florida South San County Sanitation District. The redundancy project application, the permit application, is actually going to be heard by the Coastal Commission on May 10th in San Diego. And I believe at this point, myself and district manager Gerhard Hubner are planning to go down and address the commission. So I'll let you know how that project goes. And then we also do have a meeting on Wednesday night, and I'll update you all after that meeting. I think that's all I've got tonight. Any council communications?
I have a couple. So first of all, the Five Cities Homeless Coalition has a new home, so which is a wonderful thing. So they have relocated or in the process of relocating from their existing location further up Grand Avenue into a building at the Grover City Center. So so it's good office locations, and for they are working with our chief of police with regards to additional security and additional outreach to the other businesses within that area. So there is only appointments on site, is not open to the public. It's by appointment only and discussion. So, but along that with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition as well, is there is an event tomorrow night, not quite Cinco de Mayo, but Deuce de Mayo, kind of Dos de Mayo. So is down at Finn's, there is a wonderful event come out, I believe it's from 5:30 to 9 o'clock. A $25 donation gets any number of, and I don't have any tickets with me, so I don't, I know they've got cerveche, they've got enchiladas, they've got fish and chips, they've got any number of seasonal and fish wonderfulness that is there. And a great thing that that Finn's does as well is 100% of the proceeds from the evening go to support the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and their programs. So come one, come all.
Yes.
Great. Anyone else? City manager, any reports or comments?
Just want to mention that water conservation has been in the news of late. A number of jurisdictions have taken to relaxing their various water conservation stages, as has the state of California. We are looking to bring an item to the council in late June that will bring this to the council's discussion and consider whether to relax our own stage 3 water conservation requirement, which does have a fine associated with it, down to some other additional stage, while still making sure that water conservation is an important practice that we want to continue going forward. So I wanted to let the council know that we are working on this, we're tracking on what's going on, and we'll bring an item to the council to allow you to have some discussion around this and give direction on what's appropriate for us to look at going forward.
And if I might piggyback on that for just a second, I think I had reported on this previously, but in a kind of a conjunction with that, the Zone 3 committee did make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to maintain the low reservoir response plan in place. And the board at tomorrow's meeting will actually be taking that into consideration along with a surplus water declaration. And surplus water does not mean we have extra water. It just means there were water savings from what wasn't released or what wasn't used. So that'll be at the board tomorrow for consideration.
Okay, very good. City attorney.
Could I bring up one thing I forgot? It's a report from the homeless task force, South County task force. One thing we have consistently run into is every time we want to have an event or service, first it will be the MASH event, then the warming center, then maybe someday an actual service space. Megan's Law is always quoted, in my humble legal opinion, incorrectly. And I would love, our next meeting is at the end of July. If it's okay with everyone, I would love for our city attorney to be able to provide just a one-page memo on what Megan's Law requires, so that we can share it with the task force. Because what it happens is we try to have a MASH event at the South County Regional Center, and people say, well, whoa, Megan's Law. We can't have that event while St. Pat's School is in session. Okay, well, that's a one-day event, so we get over that hump. Well, now we're going to be trying to relocate the warming center. And it's going to be, whoa, that can't happen anywhere near a school. Well, everything in Five Cities is somewhere near a school. And if we ever want a service center, same type arguments for everything. So I would like to provide for the task force just some basic legal clarity on what the law actually requires so we can go from there at our meeting.
So, city attorney, is that something that can be easily done in your humble opinion?
Yes. So, typically, I wouldn't want to make a practice of it simply because I am the attorney for the city of Grover Beach.
Yeah.
And my client is the city by and through under the rules of professional conduct, the legislative body. So most of the time my advice, in fact, all of the time, my advice is to my client. But I'm okay with doing this. I think we can sort of lay out the procedural and the legal requirements for Megan's Law, and then you could use that. I can give it to you, my client, and then you could take it and disseminate it if you wish.
So, okay, you went maybe a step further than I thought you were. Is the rest of the council okay with giving that direction? Is there?
Yes.
I would say just to make sure that there's no liability that incurs to us by that opinion, since it is going to be potentially used by folks not associated with the city. I mean, it's I agree with the working opinion, but as long as it's not someone is hanging that as an interpretation.
And if it has a disclaimer of some sort, right. I would be fine with that.
Well, and my question is, does HSOC not have their own legal counsel?
It's
Why
not
are we
an HSOC committee. Uh-huh. It's a South County task mm-hmm. force. Mm-hmm. So it's representatives from each city. So myself and city manager Bronson from Grover Beach, and then a council person and a manager from each city. So it's kind of a conglomeration of cities.
So there's no organization that's really backing it, correct? It's more of an ad hoc.
Right. We're an ad hoc, just kind of thought group as to where to locate things that need to be located.
So I guess if there's no legal risk or liability, legal counsel.
Technically, my assumption was that the council would vote on it. Functionally, what you're approving is essentially a waiver of the attorney-client privilege. I would give you a legal memo or basically a memo that sets out the rights of Megan's Law. Then you as a body have the right to waive any correspondence you get from me and waive that attorney-client privilege, and you can give it to whomever if it's the majority of the council wishes and approves that. I will put a disclaimer in it saying that, you know, this is meant for you and that no other party can rely upon it. So in doing that, then I think that diminishes any exposure to the city.
Sorry, are you suggesting we need to place this on an agenda and take a formal action?
If you want to give me direction, I'll go forward and do it.
Everyone, is there a consensus to put at least this on an agenda?
Is HSOC, have they asked us to do this or asked you to get this, or is this just...
No, it's not HSOC. It's a South County task force, so it's an issue that keeps coming up, and I keep attempting to explain it, mm-hmm. And it's not really working, and so maybe it needs to be in writing. It's all of us in the South County trying to kind of just work through these issues. And, you know, I, for all I know, I'll bring it and it will be completely ignored, but I am attempting to get over a hurdle.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah. The reason I'm asking is I'm wondering if maybe if it went through them and they were asking, if you were to offer that we would be willing to support them in this way and they were to say formally, yes, as a group, we would like you to do this for us. I'm just wondering if that would give you would give it more authority.
Yeah, it's so, it's an informal working group of people at the table just trying to brainstorm homeless issues. Mm-hmm. It only meets 2 to 3 times a year, so it's not a formal I don't know.
Okay. So if there's a majority of us who want to give staff direction to bring this back, place it on an agenda, and then we'll vote and go from there. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Closed session. City attorney.
Council, we're going to convene in closed session on conferenceable property negotiators pursuant to the Government Code Section 54956.8 for specifically property APN number 060-206-029. The agency negotiator, City Manager Bronson, negotiating party, Union Pacific Railroad, related to price and terms and conditions of payment regarding either a lease or options related to acquisition.
Very good. So with that, we are going to recess in the closed session. Thank you.